Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Can give, but if we don't take care today, tomorrow we'll surely pay. And I say tomorrow matters. Yes, it does. Tomorrow matters. Really does.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. The economy's still taking a beating. How to fix it, and are the current proposals working? CBS News correspondent John Harchie reports a lot of questions were being asked on Capitol Hill today.
Ohio Democrat Dennis Kucinich charged the administration is investing in bank stock rather than doing what Congress intended with the bailout program, which was to buy up troubled bank assets and prevent foreclosures.
Maybe this is just some kind of a game to some people in the administration. They're on their way out of office, and they just feel they can do whatever they want, pick winners and losers in the market. We've got millions of people losing their homes.
Assistant Treasury Secretary Neil Kashkari insisted the administration is doing what's needed first, investing in banks to stabilize the financial system.
We're trying to use the right tool to solve the right problem.
John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
President Bush will be looking at a more global approach this weekend, as Mark Nola reports.
All day long, plane after plane arrived at Andrews Air Force Base, bringing one world leader after another to the financial summit. President Bush wants the leaders to agree on a plan of action that ends the current crisis and prevents a recurrence.
While reforms in the financial sector are essential, the long-term solution to today's problems is sustained economic growth.
While declaring that decisive actions are required, he stands firm in saying that government intervention is not a cure-all. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
That destructive wildfire in Santa Barbara County, California, has burned more than 100 homes. Hundreds of firefighters are doing battle with it. And Governor Schwarzenegger today declared a state of emergency there.
Because of the winds that were yesterday, 60 to 70 miles an hour, the fire spread extremely quickly up there, and it destroyed a lot of homes.
The Shuttle Endeavour astronauts are about to head into orbit and a mission to the International Space Station. Correspondent Peter King is at the Kennedy Space Center.
For the first time in more than 5 months, the shuttle crew is all aboard, ready to fly in just under 2 hours. They're locking the hatch. The weather looks good for Endeavour's home improvement mission. It's bringing up a new galley, toilet, sleeping bunks, and a water purification system for the International Space Station. If it all works, the station will be able to double its crew size from 3 to 6 next year. One astronaut will stay behind. 3 will share 4 spacewalks to repair and install equipment outside the station. Cammie?
U.S. health experts are reportedly looking into whether some people have had adverse reactions to wrinkle fillers. Carolyn Van Hove is a spokeswoman for Allergan, which makes the dermal filler Juvederm.
Most commonly reported adverse events with this product are minor to moderate in nature. They're temporary. And the most common complaint that we receive following use of the product is swelling.
An FDA report says there have been more than 900 claims of facial palsy, disfigurement, and severe allergic reactions from a variety of products. On Wall Street today at the closing bell, the Dow off 337 points. This is CBS News.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Guys, you don't have to be a meteorologist to know that cold weather is just around the corner. Now's the time to head to the men's store inside JCPenney. You'll find great deals on the best brands. JCPenney has everything you need to stay warm and look cool. 50% off fleece tops, sweaters, and casual shirts. 50% off jackets and heavyweight shirts. Plus, suit separates, sport coats, and dress pants are also 40 to 50% off. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
What's more effective than good old-fashioned street protests? CBS News correspondent Sam Litzinger reports it all boils down to economics.
Now that California voters have decided to ban gay marriage in the state, many homosexuals are looking for ways to protest. Writing in the Los Angeles Times, at least in part seriously, columnist Joel Stein says designate December 5th as No Gays for a Day Day.
If you're gay, don't go to work, don't go to school, don't go shopping. Try as hard as you can not to go to bars that night. I think that's going to be the toughest.
He says a No Gays Day would show what would happen if gays just disappeared. Stein says he's not entirely sure what the effect would be, but it's worth a shot. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
State lawmakers in Nebraska are holding a special session to rework their safe haven law, designed to allow people to drop off unwanted newborns. Some used it to drop off kids as old as 17. Lawmakers are still apparently at odds over what age limit to put on that law. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Truck on the right, no signs in sight. Which lane to take? Can't make mistake. Which way to go? Too many roads. Exit almost missed. Need lane assist. Get a Nuvie. Change lanes with ease. With lane assist, exits you won't miss. Nuvie knows the road, knows where to go. Navigation tool, even saves you fuel.
Give a Garmin.
Give a Garmin.
Nuvie keeps you sane, ends driving pains. Garmin.com, Garmin.com.
Give a Garmin Nuvie with lane assist.
Nibble, nosh, savor, devour.
Kim, what are you talking about?
What I'm going to do with the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club.
Holiday Taste of
Sam's Club, where I can sample the perfect holiday meal before I host my own. Lobster ravioli, spiral glazed ham, decadent chocolate layer cake.
Ooh.
Live chef events, too.
Don't miss the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club. Friday, November 21st through Sunday, November 23rd, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Not a member? Join during the event and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See club for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining me for a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, produced daily in San Francisco. We've got a lot to talk about today. Will you join me? To just make a brief announcement here at the beginning of the show. The Peter B. Collins program is alive and well, and will continue to broadcast into December, January, and on into 2009. Our funding still a little bit wobbly, but in a Bush economy, we're doing the best we can. And I want to thank all the people who have reached out to help us financially or otherwise. And you may continue to do so to help keep us on the air. Just visit my website, peterbcollins.com, and there's a link on the homepage that says you can help. And my mailing address is Box 100, Mill Valley, California, zip code 94942. That's Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. On today's program, Robert Perry from Consortium News will kick things off with us in just a moment. Later this hour, Reverend Dr. Robin Myers. He's one of my favorite people. He is a universalist preacher from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He preaches at the Mayflower Church. He's the author of Why the Christian Right is Wrong, and he's a man who's not afraid to use the F-bomb. And I'm not talking about Joe Scarborough's fleeting expletive. I'm talking about the word fascism. We'll discuss that. We'll talk about Prop 8. And we'll talk about the Vatican's excommunication of a priest who has worked so hard on human rights issues, Father Roy Bourgeois. That's all coming up later. Next hour, Bruce Fein, our favorite Republican, returns. Constitutional Peril is his latest book. And we're going to talk about the steps Obama has taken and those he needs to take to return us to constitutional rule here in the United States. We also have two people from UC Berkeley to tell you about a study that was just released this week about the true cost of global warming. David Roland Holst and Noel Perry will be joining us for half an hour to update us on that. And then we'll talk election protection issues. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com will be with us. There's still open controversies in Alaska, Minnesota, Georgia. We've got an election protection activist from Florida who was jailed this week, and Ellen Brodsky will be on to tell us the story. We also have an update in the twisted case of Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, railroaded into jail by friends of Karl Rove, and we have some stunning updates on that that show that Siegelman was right, that he has been a victim in this case. We'll tell you more about that with Brad coming up in our third hour today. And you can call in anytime, toll-free 888-5-PETER-B. You got that, 888-573-8372. And I always appreciate your emails. Just send them to peter@peterbcollins.com, humblehost@peterbcollins.com, or fullofit@peterbcollins.com. They will all reach me. Robert Perry on the line with us. ConsortiumNews.com is the website where he publishes. He investigated the Iran-Contra scandals for us in the 1980s for Frontline and the Associated Press. Most recent book, Nick Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush, co-authored with two of his sons. Bob, how you doing today?
Good, Peter. I'm glad things are working out.
Yeah, they are, and it's also just beautiful here in California today. I hope I'm not rubbing it in for you, but
it's miserable here.
Oh, 80 degrees, and it's just like summertime.
It's drizzly and typical Washington weather in the fall.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction for Inauguration Day? We're hoping to come out and cover that, but I remember my dad went to the Kennedy inauguration, and it was 20 below or something, and they had troops come out with flamethrowers to clear the ice and snow off Pennsylvania Avenue. At least that's what he told me.
Well, the last one I went to was the inauguration in 2001 for George W. Bush, and I was there as part of this. Actually, more people were there to protest his extraordinarily phony election than were there to praise it. But it was a cold, rainy day. We just sort of stood out in our parkas and were soaked with the icy rain. The Republican types came in with they had their furs and their cashmere overcoats and, and umbrellas, and they mostly found a bit better place to stand than we did. But we were my two sons and I were at the corner of Pennsylvania and 13th or so, and so it was that was the last one I've been to, and that was pretty miserable.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we'll have to gear up for that. I want to recommend that people go to ConsortiumNews.com and read your thoughtful, somewhat lengthy piece. It's 6 pages about the danger of keeping Robert Gates. And as the transition takes shape here, Bob, it's interesting because we try to watch these things and we see trial balloons floated. I joked that Obama should have a place on his website where they float trial balloons like Jamie Gorelick, and we can play a video game and shoot that balloon down. Now the latest trial balloon for Secretary of State is Hillary Clinton, and I can't tell whether those are simply well-placed leaks coming from the Clinton camp, hoping to promote her name in front of the incoming president, or if these are serious leaks or leaks based on serious consideration. What do you know about that before we dig into Bob Gates?
Well, not too much. I think the person who was considered the front runner was John Kerry. And he, of course, not only did he run a fairly strong race in 2004, but he was an early and strong supporter of Obama's in this round. And he was generally reviewed or considered to be the guy who was most likely to get it. I'm not sure. The Hillary Clinton trial balloon strikes me as odd, frankly, considering that her husband does so much speaking abroad and is so dependent on foreign money for his income. It sounds odd because she's better known for her work on things like health care and domestic issues. But who knows? I mean, I think they have been a little rather. It could be that they're putting her out there to sort of help her get some attention as a favor too. That it keeps her name in the news. She was being talked about as someone who might get stiffed when it came to a good committee chairmanship in the Senate. There was some talk that as the musical chairs moved around, she might end up not getting a very prominent committee position. So maybe this is a way to help that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you make a good point about her husband, and we took a look yesterday at the 63-question questionnaire that an appointee for a Barack Obama cabinet or top-level post has to complete. And it would take Bill Clinton a long time to fill that one out. And so I think, you know, that that is one of the biggest issues that the Clintons would have to face in trying to find any position for Hillary in the Obama administration.
Yeah, I think especially true in a matter of foreign affairs. It doesn't seem like a natural fit for a whole bunch of reasons.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I also raised is that Madeleine Albright has been tapped to attend the G20 Economic Lame Duck Summit. I think they're going to barbecue some derivatives. She has, since she left office, taken on a lot of international clients. You go to Albright Associates or whatever her website is, and no clients are listed. But she does whisper about some success stories, and one of them was lobbying the Chinese government on behalf of a client. So we also know that she and Jim Baker split a contract with Kuwait to try to help them collect their reparations from Desert Storm era. And so, you know, I think full disclosure is the most important part here, but people like Madeleine Albright probably are walking conflicts of interest, aren't they?
Well, there are real problems when it comes especially to the Democrats in the national security foreign policy field. Not only do they have conflicts of interest, they've tended to be very compromised by their willingness to play along with the Republican-dominated arena there. To survive almost, to be considered serious players, they've had to go along with the Republicans on a whole host of issues, most notably many of them the Iraq War. But there aren't many Washington Democrats in the foreign policy field anyway who can point to being right about very many things. But there is not also a large pool of people who have been right to draw from. And those people who have been right have tended to be sort of marginalized from Washington mainstream society here. So it's hard for them to get an appointment without a lot of resistance. I mean, to me, it's amazing that people like Mel Goodman aren't being talked about more directly in terms of the senior positions. People who stood up did the right thing when they were at the CIA and in other areas, and who just are not being talked about, at least at this point, for serious major jobs in the Obama administration.
Yeah. Robert Perry's with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to take our break right now and come back so we have a little more time than usual to talk about your piece about Robert Gates and why it's not a good idea for Barack Obama to express his bipartisan urges with Gates in particular. We'll pick that up with Bob Perry in just a moment. You want to join us? Lines are open, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372, the Peter B. Collins Show. Listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Yeah. dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
It's time for the 9th International Film Festival presented by the local United Nations Association with 14 excellent international documentary films, again at the gorgeous Golden State Theater in Monterey. There will be four film sessions, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, November 13, 14, and 15 at 7 p.m., and Sunday afternoon, November 16 at 2 p.m. Admission is just $5 per day with free entry for full-time students. These outstanding films concern global issues like human rights, the environment, impacts of globalization, and security. From 15 to 90 minutes long and deal with countries and cultures as diverse as China, India, Bangladesh, New Guinea, Russia, Palestine, Argentina, and the U.S. Feature films include new documentaries, One Water, Stealing America Vote by Vote, The Judge and the General about Pinochet of Chile, and Fire Under the Snow about human rights in Tibet. That's November 13 to 16. At the Golden State. More at unamontereybay.org.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's a pizza paradise where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
And at that time, the gentleman we're discussing right now, Robert Gates, currently the Secretary of Defense, was a top official at the Central Intelligence Agency, where Poppy Bush had been director back in 1980-81. And Bob Gates distinguished himself, Robert Perry, primarily as a guy who would shape intelligence to please political leaders. And you use the phrase politicized intelligence, which you say is the thread that runs through his 30 years of government service.
Right. Well, Bob Gates is a very ambitious guy. He's also what you might call an opportunist. He was at the CIA in the 1970s when George H.W. Bush was director. He was director, of course, in 76.
Okay, I got that wrong.
And it left in 77 when Carter came in.
Mm-hmm.
But Gates has been connected to a number of these still unresolved scandals of that era, from the October surprise case in 1980, whether or not the Republicans had gone behind Jimmy Carter's back to contact the Iranians during the Iranian hostage crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Then he suddenly, whether he was involved in that or not, there's some serious allegations he was. He has this meteoric rise under Bill Casey, who becomes the CIA director for Ronald Reagan, and he becomes the person who sort of breaks the back of the CIA's analytical division, which had a reputation for objectivity and seriousness of scholarship. And he basically destroys many of the careers of these old line analysts, and pushes people ahead who will shape the intelligence the way the people in power want. So much of that, which occurs in the 1980s, the so-called politicization of intelligence, is something Bob Gates was personally behind and involved with. And, of course, it's continued to haunt us to this day, particularly what happened in 2002, 2003,
well,
the Iraq War.
I remember those annual dog and pony shows pre-PowerPoint when they used to try to quantify the Soviet threat. And it was used to pump up defense spending here in this country, saying, ooh, Cold War is awful. You know, we've got to spend another $100 billion. And
right.
Gates was one of the key presenters of those annual events.
Right. He basically broke the back of the criminologists. There were these people that were saying at that time in the CIA that the Soviet Union was in decline, that its economy was in serious trouble, that it was falling behind technologically. And that was not the answer that the Reagan administration wanted. They wanted to have the American people scared of the Soviet Union, that it was growing, it was more powerful. It was a behemoth that had to be countered with a major military buildup. So basically, Gates gave them the intelligence they wanted, which was to make the Soviet Union this extremely frightening thing, when in fact the criminologists were right, that the CIA, that the Soviet Union was in rapid decline and obviously headed for demise. But that is so. What Gates was able to provide was the material that backed Reagan's policies, both in terms of going to the Third World with aggressive operations like the war in Nicaragua, and as well as building up the military to take on this what became really a phantom threat. So that was important. But then Gates also was tied into the Iran-Contra scandal in a major way,
mm-hmm.
the arming of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, which was the so-called Iraq-Aid scandal.
Yep.
All those scandals got kind of swept under the rug at the end of the Bush 1 presidency on the way into the Clinton presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And Gates sort of went into sort of an exile, but remained part of the Bush family orbit. He basically got his job at Texas A&M because Poppy Bush put a good word in for him,
mm-hmm.
and was brought back onto the national stage when Rumsfeld was removed in November of 2006.
Well, let me just jump in because you correctly say in your piece that it was the Iraq Study Group that actually brought Gates back to Washington, put him into circulation, and then when it was time to get rid of Rummy, Bush had words with him to say, well, will you essentially repudiate the work you did at the Iraq Study Group if I make you Secretary of Defense?
What people don't understand about that sequence of events right around the election of 2006 was that Rumsfeld had gone soft on the Iraq War. Rumsfeld wanted to essentially go with Murtha and with his commanders in the field, Abizaid and Casey, in drawing down U.S. military forces in Iraq. And he sent Bush a memo, that secret memo at the time, it's come out since, on November 6th of 2006, saying, this is what we have to do. On November 7th was the election. Of course, the Democrats carried both houses of Congress. On the next day, Bush fires Rumsfeld and brings in Gates. People then interpreted that as Rumsfeld being repudiated for being a hawk and Gates being the relative dove. It was the opposite. Gates was the guy who was going to become the cover, the person who was going to be the presenter, really, the defender of Bush's escalation, which was coming, which we know is now as the surge. So people got that completely backwards. Rumsfeld was the dove at that point, and Gates was the hawk.
Mm-hmm.
But Gates kind of got this, he was accepted as kind of this wise man who was going to be more moderate than Rumsfeld. And that sort of has stuck, even though what we have seen is that Gates promoted the surge, he promoted this escalation. He attacked the Democrats for their efforts to draw down the forces in Iraq. He was a very loyal Bush person, and he remains this to this day. Just this week, he was attacking the Russian government
mm-hmm.
for its objection to having this missile defense system put in right at its borders. So Gates has remained more or less the old hawk that he was going back into the 1980s, but has sort of. He sort of understood as this moderate. So,
mm-hmm.
So Obama's being pushed by some of these centrist Democrats, people like Lee Hamilton and David Boren, to keep on Gates
mm-hmm.
as this sort of a nice gesture of bipartisanship. But Gates is really, if Obama buys that one, he has bought a sort of bridge to nowhere.
And, Bob, in 20 seconds, is it convenient for Obama to keep him on as a fall guy, a Republican who can say it's their war?
It's more likely to go the opposite way. Gates is more likely to blame Obama if Iraq goes even worse.
Mm.
Gates can say, well, gee, if they just continue to follow Bush's strategies, it would have worked out. So I think he's playing with a real loaded gun here if he wants to to keep Gates on.
Read all about it at consortiumnews.com. Robert Perry, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter.
We'll talk soon. Coming up next, Reverend Robin Myers returns to our program. We'll talk about California's Prop 8 and hate.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by New York Life Insurance Company. 163 years of financial strength helps ensure your loved ones will always be taken care of. That's why New York Life is the company you keep. I'm Charles Osgood. Most of us think of this as the 11th month of the year 2008, but the government doesn't. To the government, or at least that part of the government that keeps track of how much money it's collecting and spending, this is already the second month of next year, fiscal 2009. And so far, so terrible.
Fiscal year 09, which began in October, there's no question by a multitude, by a factor of two or three, is going to be the biggest deficit we've ever seen.
More after this. Are you concerned about struggling with your cell phone in an emergency? The Clarity Life C900 is a specially designed mobile phone that helps you to stay connected to the ones you love. One push of the red heart button immediately contacts family or friends during an emergency. Its large screen and four-button design make it easy to use, and it amplifies the sound, makes it louder. If you're like many seniors and safety is the main reason you have a cell phone, then look for the Clarity Life C900, where simplicity meets peace of mind. Available at clarityproducts.com.
I give my wife gold because I know that it makes her feel special.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry customer Larry Young, talks about why only gold is treasured.
I can tell her that I love her, but when I give her that little box and she opens it up, actions speak louder than words.
From classic to contemporary, only Jared offers five times the selection of truly distinctive gold jewelry, with prices from under $50 to over $1,000.
It can only be Jared.
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com. Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
In the first month of October alone, Uncle Sam was in the hole to the tune of $237.2 billion. That used to be considered quite a lot of money. The reason fiscal 2009 started off so poorly and will get worse is that with the economy at a virtual standstill, the government has been taking in a whole lot less and has been spending a whole lot more.
Tax receipts tend to either grow very strongly when the economy is robust and to be quite weak when the economy is soft. So, you know, we're seeing a tremendous weakening in the fiscal position associated with that.
Stephen Stanley is the chief U.S. economist of RBS Greenwich Capital. The fact that the government is taking in so much less money is bad, since it means the taxpayers and businesses are making so much less to pay taxes on. The fact that the government is spending more is not all bad, says Stanley.
It's kind of a good news, bad news situation that the government has been very aggressive in trying to address the problems in the financial system. And the bad news is that means a very big budget deficit. The good news is it means that the government's being proactive, and hopefully that will help to ultimately resolve some of the issues.
So don't feel too bad.
Half of the deficit comes from the TARP, the first injection of money into the banks that occurred last month. So that, you know, that, I guess that's some solace.
Have a nice day. The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. A Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The passage of Prop 8 here in California has challenged many progressives and their religious and cultural views. and you watch the way churches participated in politics, you might want to lose your religion.
Life is bigger. It's bigger than you. You are not me. The links that I will go to. The distance in your eyes. Oh no, I've said too much. I set it up.
That's me in the corner.
Me in the corner. That's me in the spot. Like losing my religion. Trying to keep up.
Returning to our program right now from Oklahoma City, the Reverend Dr. Robin Myers. He is the pastor at the Mayflower UCC Church in Oklahoma City. He's the author of Why the Christian Right is Wrong, a minister's manifesto for taking back your faith, your flag, your future. There's another F word in there, fascism, that he uses that is very important and used advisedly. And he has a new book forthcoming that we should see in a few months called Saving Jesus from the Church, subtitled How to Stop Worshiping Christ and Start Following Jesus. And I want to repeat that subtitle, How to Stop Worshiping Christ and Start Following Jesus. I think that's going to come into play in our conversation shortly here. Dr. Myers, great to talk with you again.
Peter, it's great to be back on your show. Thanks.
And I thank you for coming to counsel us here a little bit and offer some of your views and thoughts. Because there are real conflicted feelings in California right now. Barack Obama won handily here, the presidential race, but the same turnout produced a narrow defeat for same-sex marriage by propelling to victory Proposition 8. It's a simple one-sentence statement that says that under the Constitution, marriage shall be between a man and a woman. And this upends the Supreme Court ruling from just 6 months ago that granted same-sex marriage rights in California, saying that they were embedded in our Constitution. Now, there will be court challenges, no doubt, but the raw feelings that people have are based on two real critical areas, Dr. Myers. One, that religious groups cross the line, the separation of church and state, by participating in secular politics and by using pulpits and church property and the church bulletins and other methods to get a political message out to a tax-exempt religious group. And secondly, there are very hard feelings because over $70 million was spent in support of or opposition to Proposition 8. And much of the money came from out-of-state conservative religious groups, Mormons, Christians, and Catholics. And the money was used to buy television time where commercials delivered lies. So heavenly deception was used to promote and pass a ballot measure that these people believe is morally righteous. But I believe that the end does not justify their means. So I've given you a lengthy question there. Take a couple of minutes to respond.
Sure. First of all, it is a wonderful time to be alive in this country and to have witnessed what we just witnessed. So that's sort of the ethos that ought to hang over everything. The whole country is going bluer, and the Christian right, with some holdouts here in Oklahoma, we're now the reddest state in the country. But what happened in California has to be incredibly disappointing to lots of people, and it certainly is to all of us who perform same-sex marriage and believe that it's simply a civil right that anyone should get to marry regardless of gender. But, Peter, look at this as a kind of last gasp of the Christian right. They lost the election. They have lost much of their influence, and so they are turning to the kinds of battles they still think they can win. And I agree with you that it was out-of-state money. It was pulpiteering of the worst kind. It was violation of separation of church and state. But I'll tell you right now, it isn't going to last. This is a last gasp, and it is even, I don't even think it's going to last long in California. Everybody knows California is a bellwether. The way California goes, the rest of the country goes. Look what happened in Connecticut just yesterday. Front page of the New York Times, mm-hmm. Gay marriage is legal in Connecticut. So, you know, we don't get there all at once. We get there in fits and starts. And I would predict that in 6 months, gay marriage is legal again in California. We'll be on the phone again rejoicing.
Okay, well, I hope you're right. And there are encouraging signs that the Supreme Court will find that on a technical basis that Proposition 8 is invalid.
Yes.
And that is that it is a revision to the Constitution, and therefore it requires not only a majority vote in the initiative of the public, but also two-thirds passage by both houses of the legislature, which is unachievable either with the current crop or the incoming members in December here in California.
That's right, and I think that will inevitably be overturned, and one of the things we can be optimistic about is that young people, 2-1, voted for Barack Obama. I'm a university professor, as your listeners know. My students, even at a small private liberal arts college in Oklahoma, overwhelmingly have different opinions about gays and gay marriage than my generation and certainly than my parents' generation. There is a noticeable change, but there are last gasps of people trying one more time to inflict a particular religious viewpoint on all Americans. Their days are numbered, and I will say boldly on your program, it's a great program to say this, this is very temporary, and I would ask all the gay and lesbian couples in California to keep faith and to know that there's even a preacher in Oklahoma who is fighting for them.
And for those who are listening, this Saturday there are protests planned across the country, but also San Francisco, Los Angeles are key points. 10:30 a.m. Pacific time, 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, and calculate your local time zone in between, and maybe go searching on the web for the protest nearest you. But
and we're going to have them in Oklahoma. Again, this may be hard to believe, but there are significant protests planned in Oklahoma, which I will be part of, in this reddest of all the red states. People are angry here, they're upset, and they will not be denied.
So how does it feel to see 9 states flip to blue? And we know that that means, particularly in the case of North Carolina, a very narrow margin. But it is, you know, fascinating and encouraging to see Barack Obama redraw the electoral map in this country. So how does it feel to be left behind?
That's a good choice of words, left behind. I did a column for a local newspaper, and my opening sentence was, while the nation wept, Oklahoma spat defiantly. We have this feeling that there's something endearing about ignorance and that the rest of the country can go whatever way it wants, but by God, we'll be the last holdout of Christian values, even though we have no idea what Christian values are. It's very disappointing. It's very discouraging. But I live here, Peter, and I do my work here in large part because I'm needed here. If I moved to San Francisco or to Massachusetts, I'd be one among many. But there are people who need my voice in this part of the country, and I'm going to keep speaking out on the things I believe in. And I think, again, it's this idea that there's so much fear that governs fundamentalist religion and people who voted against Barack Obama because of his race and are simply unwilling to admit that. Racism still has a lot to do with this. And I'm simply celebrating what the rest of the country did and how many states went blue. And Oklahoma may be the last holdout of red states. They may be the very last one. But they, too, will someday see the wisdom of what we have all just lived through, because it was earth-shaking, and it was magnificent, and it was joyful.
Dr. Robin Myers with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with him at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, give me some advice on this, Robin Myers. Yesterday, we announced for our listeners that there is an IRS form, which is 13909. It's available on their website at irs.gov, and it is the tax-exempt organization complaint form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to ask you if this is a case where we should turn the other cheek, or if we should fight for separation of church and state, because we saw egregious examples of pastors, for example, who were told by Catholic bishops to deliver a certain message on a certain Sunday in support of Proposition 8.
Yeah.
And one, Father Jeff from Fresno, not only refused to deliver that propaganda, but he announced at the end of his homily that day that he is a gay man.
Yeah.
And as a result, he was removed from the parish. And I'm offended by that,
yeah.
And I'm offended by the religious expression that crossed that line into political speech. But I want to ask you, because you may do the same thing. You might offer progressive views from your pulpit, and I actually don't want to get you in trouble with the IRS.
Well, here's the very simple and key difference between what can be done in the pulpit and what cannot be done. I'm very well known for a person who espouses very progressive, very liberal Christian values, and everyone knows I was a supporter of Barack Obama, and we have, my church has been called the Democratic Party at Prayer. Andrew Rice, who ran against Jim Inhofe, is a member of my church. Jim Roth, first openly gay man to run for public office in Oklahoma, is a member of my church. And we're very well known for that. But I never endorse a candidate from the pulpit. I never use the church for any kind of partisan political activity, fundraising, for example, or the passing out of buttons or bumper stickers. I never allow the church mailing list to be used for any kind of partisan purpose. So the IRS could come to Mayflower and say, hey, we think you're a liberal church that's crossed the line, and we would win because I still have my First Amendment rights as a preacher. I can still say who I think we should elect, but I never say who the church tells people to elect or whom God wants people to elect, which is, of course, an incredibly arrogant and presupposing position anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one church within our coverage area. It's in Arcata. It's a Trinity church. I don't think it's Baptist, but Trinity. And it turns out the pastor's name is John McCain. And they had banners on church property in support of Proposition 8. And the church is also a precinct. It's a polling place.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought that crossed a number of lines, and I hope that people will go and judiciously use this form. It's at the IRS website. Just click on irs.gov, and in the search window, you're looking for form 13909.
And do definitely tell your listeners should not go quietly when it comes to the separation of church and state. It is the founding principle that has made more religious freedom possible in this country than anywhere else on earth. The wall between church and state should be put back together brick by brick. It should not be torn down. So by all means, do whatever you can to protect the separation of church and state.
Let's talk to Jack in Eureka. Welcome, Jack. You're on with Robin Myers on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you. And Robin, I just want to really commend you for being such a wonderful bright light in Oklahoma. That's my home state.
Oh, good.
And I'm old enough to remember when it was totally Democratic.
Yes.
You know, I was born in 37 back there, and so came through the Democratic days, and I'm just appalled at how red it is right now. And hopefully it'll change.
Well, Jack, thank you for calling and letting me know you're from this state. It's interesting that the state constitution of Oklahoma was one of the most populist constitutions ever drafted in the United States. Okies had real distrust of big business and any concentration of power in too few hands. And we have forsaken our own legacy of populism and the Democratic Party in Oklahoma for two reasons. One, we have the most conservative newspaper in America, the Oklahoman, once called the Daily Oklahoman.
Yeah, the Gaylords are just...
The Gaylord, who is right of Attila the Hun, may he rest in peace.
Attila.
Yes. Yeah, not E.K.
Yes. Well, E.K. was actually a member of the predecessor church to the one-eyed pastor, small world, but his son took over, and his son has since died about 3 years ago, actually went to his funeral, because I believe you should go to the funeral of your enemies, but that's another story. But the other thing, the second, is the Baptist Church. The Baptist Church, which rules Oklahoma from top to bottom, and you know what their agenda is. And all I would say to you both, Peter and Jack, is that the shine is off. The Republican Party is in disarray. the Christian right is fractured. They did not get their way on many, many issues. And this next generation, the 18 to 30-year-olds or 35-year-olds that are coming along, have such a different agenda and are so really sick and tired of the hypocrisies of the Christian right that I don't think that power is going to come back. I think it's going to continue to wane, and that's something to celebrate.
Jack, thanks for your call today. We'll continue with Dr. Robin Myers in a moment. Come on, guys, sing for me. Here we go. Oh, that's the wrong one.
Which sounds a lot like latent homophobia to me.
We are talking about religion-infused hate and homophobia. Dr. Robin Myers is our guest. We'll continue in a moment. You can talk with us toll-free. 888-5-PETER-B.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman.
Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman.
Most people go to the airport bathroom to relieve themselves before their next flight. But not you. No. You're looking to become a member of the Ground Level Club.
Not what they mean by a layover.
You, Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman, voted against gay marriage. That's because you want to have as many partners as you can, in as many cans as you can.
All right, that's enough of that. Dr. Robin Myers continues with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And, Dr. Myers, I play that for humor value, but also to point up the hypocrisy that is rampant. And I'd like to ask you to tie the anti-same-sex marriage forces that embrace religiosity as their driving force to the subtitle of your forthcoming book, How to Stop Worshiping Christ and Start Following Jesus, because I don't think that any of these actions are things that Jesus would do.
Well, of course not. And the book that's coming out in March from HarperCollins is a way of making people understand that a Galilean sage, a human being who came teaching and preaching love and wisdom and inclusiveness and love of all people, was gradually over the centuries turned into a supernatural savior who died to pay the price for our sins and all of that nonsense. And that we have essentially ended up with an alien that we can worship from a distance but can't follow and imitate, because after all, we're categorically different from him. He's the Son of God and we're just ordinary human beings. So I'm in this book reversing all of that and asking people of all religious persuasions, including evangelicals, to follow the teachings and the example of Jesus and not to worship him as a savior, because that's when we get into trouble. That's when we begin to decide who are the goats and who are the sheep, who's in and who's out, who's saved and who's lost, who's good and who's an evil doer. I think you hear the resonance there.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to gay people, some of the most wonderful work done by the Jesus Seminar, a group of historical Jesus researchers, has to do with purity. It has often been the case that religion is about purity, maintaining a pure lifestyle and not getting quote-unquote dirty, because God is pure. Jesus said God is love, God is compassion, and wants you to show compassion to all people. And so Jesus did this boundary-breaking ministry to the Gentiles, and he gathered sinners and tax collectors and prostitutes and all kinds of folk that had fallen from the orders of life around him. So certainly he would have collected gay and lesbian people around him, because they have always been on the outs in society.
Mm-hmm.
So religiosity simply gives a kind of sanction to people's fears and their misunderstandings. And people who are very homophobic, I'm convinced, are full of fears about people they don't understand, and they are not living comfortably within their own sexual skin, and so they persecute those who are different from them. It's an age-old problem. It has always been with us, and it will probably always be with us. But the preaching and teaching of the gospel is, get over it and love people. The message of the gospel is fear not. It's not be afraid, be very afraid.
And I just got word from Tom at KGOE in Eureka, and Saturday, 10:30 a.m., Humboldt County Courthouse, expecting a large crowd for an anti-Prop 8 rally. And if you can make it, I certainly hope you will.
Great.
Here's Henry in Los Angeles. You're on the air with Dr. Robin Myers. Henry?
Hi, good afternoon, Peter and Doctor.
Hi, Henry.
Hi, I just want to say I'm a heterosexual African-American male who is vehemently against Proposition 8, and I'm also appalled at all of the racist hatred that seems to be propagated against our new president-elect.
Well, it is out there. There's no doubt about it.
It is, and all the rumors that he's a secret Muslim and that he's going to, he's going to take over and be a new Hitler and institute martial law and take people's guns away. We've heard all of that in Oklahoma. A lot of that is just racism trying to speak itself through a different name. In the church, we think confession precedes forgiveness and reconciliation. One of the things we're going to have to do now, and Barack Obama gives us this opportunity, is confess to how much racism there still is in the country and use his election as a chance to make progress. Because any time human beings look at something different, they fear it automatically. It's We're hardwired to do that.
Yeah, Henry, thank you for your call. Dr. Myers, just a minute remaining.
Sure.
I wanted to get your thoughts because Father Roy Bourgeois has inspired me almost as much as you have. He's led the protests on the School of the Americas for many years, and he has been excommunicated by the Catholic Church of the Vatican in Rome for participating in a ceremony in which a woman took vows to become a priest.
Right.
And I'm really offended by this. I just wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, it was in the New York Times today, as a matter of fact. He's been excommunicated. Two stories out of the Catholic Church. A priest who allows a woman to become ordained as a priest is excommunicated. Another priest in, I think it was North Carolina, told everybody in his parish who voted for Barack Obama that they could not take communion.
Right.
Now, that tells you exactly the depth of the problems, the dysfunction in the American Catholic Church, because there's absolutely no reason one can say that only men should be priests according to the Bible. Okay? But people exercising their vote for Barack Obama, this groundbreaking election, to say that those people can't come to the communion table anymore because a priest does not agree with their decision is the worst kind of religion I can imagine.
Dr. Robin Myers, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
October retail sales plunged.
We're certainly going through what we call a shopper correction.
A raging California wildfire.
More than 100 homes destroyed. I'm Steve Futterman in Santa Barbara.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. On the bright side, it's easier to find a spot in the mall parking lot these days. Fewer people are shopping, and they're buying less.
Instead of two sweaters, now it's one.
But there's no bright side for retailers. CBS News correspondent Sam Litzinger reports.
The government says retail sales fell 2.8% last month.
You have to reach way back to see anything weaker.
Michael Namira, the chief economist for the International Council of Shopping Centers, says it's the biggest decline since they started collecting numbers like this in 1992.
The consumer has really frozen up.
Anything encouraging?
At some point down the road, we're likely to see some pent-up demand come out. But that may be 6, 9 or even 12 months down the road.
Which wouldn't be soon enough to save this holiday shopping season. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
Just as housing is going through what they call a correction, analyst Candace Corlett says shoppers are correcting their spending habits.
2009 is going to be even tougher than 2008. The only good news is that retailers won't be as surprised. They will have expected it, and they'll be figuring out new tactics to work with shoppers who now are not so passionate about consuming.
Today's report, coupled with Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's statement that financial markets are under severe strain, made for a volatile day on Wall Street. At the close, the Dow was 337 points lower at 84.97. This is CBS News.
How to pump up the festive without pumping up the energy bill. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get some energy-efficient LED Christmas lights and decorations that use up to 90% less energy. Step 2. Decorate, making your home ultra-festive. Step 3. Bask in the glow of a lower energy bill.
The Home Depot has all the decorations you need to get your home ready for the holidays at guaranteed low prices that are now even lower. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Nibble, nosh, savor, devour.
Kim, what are you talking about?
What I'm going to do with the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club.
Holiday Taste of?
Sam's Club, where I can sample the perfect holiday meal before I host my own. Lobster ravioli, spiral glazed ham, decadent chocolate layer cake.
Ooh.
Live chef events, too.
Don't miss the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club. Friday, November 21st through Sunday, November 23rd. 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Not a member? Join during the event and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See club for details.
The wealthy coastal town of Montecito, California, in Santa Barbara County, is home to many celebrities, including Oprah Winfrey and Rob Lowe. But right now, it's the scene of a devastating wildfire. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is there.
Throughout the day, as the fire continued to burn, they were surveying the damage here. It was not a pleasant task.
We lost a lot of homes. We're talking well over 100 homes.
That's Santa Barbara City Fire Chief Ron Prince. The winds that buffeted the fire last night were not as strong today, giving firefighters a chance to move in both on the ground and especially in the air. And the fire was moving away from homes. But officials here know the winds could kick up again. Sheriff Bill Brown.
We have a lull right now. But conditions can change very quickly.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Santa Barbara.
As President Bush prepared to host a 20-nation summit on the global economic crisis, the White House called for the release of federal loans to prop up U.S. automakers. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
If members of Congress want to help distressed automakers, the White House says they should authorize the Energy Department to accelerate its loan program. Energy has $25 billion to help manufacturers produce more fuel-efficient cars. But the White House still believes the law will not let it use bank bailout money to help the auto industry.
Four insurance companies are asking government regulators for permission to acquire thrift institutions so they can qualify for some of the $700 billion rescue fund. The government's been accused of not doing enough for homeowners facing foreclosure, but now, reports CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason, there's a plan on the table.
Today, Sheila Bair unveiled a sweeping FDIC proposal to keep distressed borrowers in their homes by reducing their monthly mortgage payments, either by cutting the interest rate on loans or extending the payoff terms from 30 to 40 years. In exchange, the government would pay lenders $1,000 for each loan modification and agree to cover half the loss if the borrower ultimately defaults.
The FDIC wants to use money from the bailout fund, but the Treasury Department says the fund is for investment and the FDIC plan is a spending proposal. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
Guys, you don't have to be a meteorologist to know that cold weather is just around the corner. Now's the time to head to the men's store inside JCPenney. You'll find great deals on the best brands. JCPenney has everything you need to stay warm and look cool. 50% off fleece tops, sweaters, and casual shirts. 50% off jackets and heavyweight shirts. Plus, suit separates, sport coats, and dress pants are also 40 to 50% off. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
From San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Coming up later this hour, a report from the University of California at Berkeley about the true cost of climate change. The author of the study, David Roland Host, and one of the people who funded it, Noel Perry, will join me in about half an hour. But first, we got some work to do with constitutional lawyer Bruce Fine. We're working on a constitutional counter-revolution. Can we return America to constitutional rule? Bruce Bruce Fein has been on our program before. He served in the Justice Department back in the Nixon administration. During the Reagan years, he was counsel and also, he was a White House aide and also counsel at the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. He worked on the impeachment of President Bill Clinton in the late 90s. And since Bush took office, he has been extremely courageous in his public criticisms of the creeping anti-constitutional behavior of Bush and his appointees. His most recent book is called Constitutional Peril, The Life and Death Struggle for Our Constitution and Democracy. And while Bruce Fein and I respect each other and respectfully disagree on many issues, conservative to liberal, we share a real strong commitment to the Constitution, a disappointment at what has occurred with both parties' complicity in the last 7 years, and a desire to restore full constitutional rule here in the United States. Bruce Fein, welcome back to our program.
Thank you for inviting me again, Peter.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I want to get your thoughts first off on the early steps. We're only in the transition period, but the Obama team has signaled very clearly that they want to close Guantanamo, that they want to bring those prisoners, I think detainees is too much of a euphemism, to trial in the United States, and that they want to dismantle some of the most egregious constitutional violations by the Bush administration. Are you encouraged by these early signals?
There's some promising signs, but I think you've overstated a little bit what the current signals are.
All right.
Shutting down Guantanamo itself really is not meaningful. What's meaningful is what you do with a detainee. Now, the Obama administration transition team is flirting with the idea of what you might call a national security court to detain individuals without accusation or charge, something that I think is preposterous and, again, counter-constitutional. If there's a violation of our criminal code, and we need to remember it's exceedingly sweeping, material assistance to a foreign terrorist organization like al-Qaeda
mm-hmm.
includes training for 25 seconds on how to use a knife. And if we can't prove that level of danger association with a foreign terrorist group, then we have no business thinking they're so dangerous that we need to detain them, deprive them of their liberty without accusation. And again, this is a situation where the deprivation is forever, i.e., whenever the war against terrorism ends. Now, the Obama administration has given some positive signals that they will not move forward with these military commission trials
mm-hmm.
and would transfer the cases to civilian court. But it's been hedged. And to my mind, the constitutional obligation is so clear, somewhat disappointing that Obama has hedged his words so much.
Mm-hmm.
After all, there's nothing interfering with the president's foreign policy and international negotiations to say all these military commission trials are going to stop if I'm there, so we really shouldn't go forward and already start planning for transitioning any of the charges into federal civilian criminal jurisdiction.
Well, Bruce Fein, I agree with you. I would like to hear more explicit, less nuanced commentary from Obama and his advisors on this explicit issue. I will say, and I'm not trying to make an excuse here, that the media performed so poorly in the debates and in any kinds of interviews and news conferences that have involved Obama during this past year and the protracted election cycle. There's been very little asked about these issues and also about the wiretapping programs. And so he's been able to skate in some ways because nobody's bothered to ask him about it.
Well, I agree with that observation, Peter, but if we really want a new leaf here, real change, these things are so important, a president shouldn't be required to be asked whether he will obey the Constitution.
Amen.
He says, I don't need this inquiry. I'm separating myself from Bush-Cheney contra-constitutional practices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making it clear right now, we are now returning to a republic rather than an empire. I'm shutting down these really quite gross violations of the Constitution. And when they've had a chance for Supreme Court review, they've generally been rebuked. And they say that's what is a little unsettling, because there was a pattern, maybe pattern is too strong, but certainly several instances where Obama, during his campaign, seemed to flip or hedge, whether it was public funding of his campaign or his view on gun control or his view on death penalty, mm-hmm. his view on the FISA violations, that were a little unsettling because these weren't just arguments over whether you have bridges or roads in one district or another. It goes to the core of what we understand to be the rule of law.
And you and I might have different viewpoints on those subjects, but I found them unsettling. Because from my point of view, the Roberts Supreme Court put a floor on the death penalty with the Louisiana child molestation case. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I applauded that, and he didn't like that. So
yeah, it was quite stunning. And moreover, I guess to me what was more unsettling, less the substantive view, than it looked like, all right, we've got another guy who just puts his hand up and is a human weather vane and would shift without rooting himself in deep principles when that was what's at stake. Again, I differentiate between changing a view on whether you're voting for a bridge or a road or something like that. That's pork barrel. But these are fundamental attitudes and core values of the United States.
Bruce Fine with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you'd like to talk with him, he's here till the bottom of the hour at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. A quick note for our KRXA listeners in the Monterey area. There is a CSUMB basketball game coming your way starting at about 4:45 today. So do not be surprised when you hear sports instead of me. And we hope that the UMB team is victorious. Bruce Fine, you made a reference a couple of minutes ago to national security courts as an idea that's surfacing from the Obama transition as a substitute for the military commissions and the mess at Guantanamo. And I use Guantanamo as an icon for what I consider to be a gulag that may be beyond our knowledge, detention centers that have not yet been revealed. And I want to ask you to flesh this out a little bit about national security courts, because your comment was the first I've heard. Is this coming from Cass Sunstein or any of the other senior legal advisors to Obama?
Yes, it's something that broached Cass Sunstein, Jack Goldsmith, I think Lawrence Tribe at Harvard. The idea is that you would get some special court that would handle secret evidence in a particular way to determine whether persons ought to be detained, even though they aren't accused of crime. To my mind, the National Security Court would be a substitute right now for what we have full habeas corpus review in light of the Supreme Court's Boumediene decision last June of those who claim there's no factual or legal foundation for thinking they're enemy combatants. And my argument is, listen, we should not be depriving of anybody of their liberty if we can't accuse them of crime and then have a trial. They say this is not a system where we don't have enormous breadth in crafting criminal laws that sweep in practically everything that may be a threat. I say, including the fact that there have been numerous prosecutions of people of the likes of David Hicks because they trained in a terrorist training camp, even though they never threatened an American ever. So if we can go that far, it seems to me, in terms of extending the criminal prohibition, why are we suggesting we need this authority to detain people we can't even accuse of a crime of that sweep?
Yeah.
But that's the idea of this national security court. It's never been fleshed out in detail, but the most troublesome part is, why do we need it? It's totally superfluous. It is, I think, Peter, an effort to try to accommodate the optics and people who would say, oh, you're weak on terrorism, well, we'll throw them a bone. Well, my view, when you're talking about people's liberty, you know, optics is out the window. Throwing people a bone is out the window. It's the core of what the United States is as a country, that we don't detain people like in the Soviet Union without a trial, without a charge, and an opportunity to defend. It's not that we're weak. No, if we find someone, they're guilty, we sentence them strictly. It can be even to death. Timothy McVeigh, Moussaoui could have gotten the death penalty, but we give them a fair trial. That's what it means to be America.
Yeah. Well, I fully agree with you, Bruce. I think this is very critical. And if we're going to dismantle the mess created by the Bush administration, we can't create a parallel jungle gym that has some of the same defects, particularly from constitutional and international law viewpoints. So, Bruce, let me ask you this. Have you ever found out what the current legal status is of Osama bin Laden vis-a-vis the September 11th attacks from the U.S. Justice Department point of view. To my knowledge, we have never issued any charges or even any kind of indictment in absentia for those acts attributed to that man.
Well, that's true, Peter. On the other hand, we do have him under indictment for conspiring to destroy defense establishments for activity before 9/11.
Right.
So he is under indictment, but not under indictment for 9/11 itself.
But isn't that curious? I mean, wouldn't we ordinarily do that just as a procedure to say this is our belief that he's responsible for 9/11?
Well, we would if there was an anticipation we would try him in civilian court. You know, the others who have been accused and may and are scheduled at present to be tried by military commissions like Sheikh Mohammed, KSM,
mm-hmm.
They were not indicted because military commissions don't issue indictments.
I see.
They're just captured and then charged under military authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea may be, well, we don't want to indict him because then that suggests we're not at war. He's just a criminal. And then if we're not at war, then we can't go traipsing around the Milky Way killing anybody we say is Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, explains the absence of an actual indictment.
All right. We're going to take a break and return with Bruce Fine. I want to talk with him about how we restore constitutional rule related to my Fourth Amendment rights and the terrorist surveillance program, the domestic wiretapping program in this country. We'll talk about that and those pernicious signing statements that Bush has used. That's coming up next. Bruce Fine, my guest, read his new book, Constitutional Peril. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Want to meet a healthcare provider that will give you the time to talk about your health issues and actually listen to you? Are you looking for an alternative to the pill-popping culture created by the mega-ceutical companies? Do you have chronic pain, headaches, depression, allergies, or any other unresolved health concerns? Give Optimal Health a try. Hi, I'm Glenn Sadowski, licensed acupuncturist at Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey at 655-3208. I'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in downtown Carmel on the second and fourth Sundays of each month. Reserve your space for an absolutely free 20-minute health evaluation, a wonderful opportunity to make an informed decision on your well-being. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture at 655-3208 today. Times are limited. Optimal Health, where you receive good medicine with great results. Our number again is 655-3208 or on the web at optimalhealthmonterey.com. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. It's a gorgeous day out there right now, but we've got a lot going on in traffic. In Salinas, on northbound 101, just south of Baranda Road, there's a traffic hazard. Several vehicles have hit it. CHP is on the scene. Also, on northbound 101, just north of Highway 183, there is a traffic hazard there. A couch and cushions are in the slow lane. Many vehicles have already hit them. So watch out there. Now taking a look at Santa Cruz, we have a few traffic hazards happening there. On Freedom Boulevard at Hames Road, there is a black pipe in the road. On southbound Highway 1, just north of State Park Drive, there is a 6-foot-long board in the fast lane. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a great commute and enjoy this beautiful day.
Time for more on the Peter B. Show. Ex-Creedence man John Fogerty there. That's called Long Dark Night. Now, the Long Dark Night of Bush and Cheney is going to fade behind us, but will, using that metaphor, Barack Obama shine a bright enough light to restore constitutional rule in this country? We're discussing that and working on a constitutional counter-revolution with Bruce Fine, his latest book called Constitutional Peril, and that's out in hardcover. I recommend it to you. And Patrick has the question that I wanted to ask, and I'm going to let him do it. Patrick, go right ahead in Monterey.
It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. I had heard, I think, on the Tom Hartman show, actually secondhand, I didn't hear the actual broadcast, that John Dean said that if the lame duck Congress were to impeach Bush, he could still pardon people. And the question, that the million-dollar question for me is, yes or no, I want to put this to rest. If the lame duck Congress were to impeach Bush, could that prevent him, when he's under impeachment, from pardoning Rove, Rumsfeld, Cheney et al.?
All right, Bruce?
The answer is, if impeachment under the Constitution just means an accusation by the House of Representatives, then it's followed by a trial in the Senate, where you need a two-thirds vote to convict and then remove the president from office. Impeachment oftentimes is a shorthand for the entire process, but if in the lame duck session the House impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, the Senate convicted, and he was removed from office, he could no longer pardon anyone. Only the President of the United States can pardon. It would be like suggesting Richard Nixon, after he resigned under a cloud of impeachment, could pardon. No, he couldn't. He couldn't pardon himself. He had to rely on President Ford to do that. So the answer is no. Impeachment taken to its full conclusion would be a remedy for the dire threat that President Bush will use the pardon to whitewash his entire administration.
Thank you for that, Patrick. And we did discuss that with Scott Horton the other day. He's got a powerful new article in Harper's, the December issue, called Justice After Bush. Bruce Fine, I want to ask you next about the wiretapping issues. Earlier this week, I talked with the incoming Democratic senator from Oregon, Jeff Merkley, told him I wanted my Fourth Amendment rights back, and he pledged to fight for that. And I'm working every member I talk to of the House or Senate on that issue. I think it's really important. It's paramount, in my view. It's one of the biggest ripoffs of our constitutional rights that we've seen. What's your strategy moving forward to try to restore our Fourth Amendment rights and end the illegal surveillance of American citizens?
Well, the first thing we've got to do is punish those who violated our rights for 5 years at a minimum under the so-called terrorist surveillance program. Now, you may recall President Bush, he first insinuated that he could flout the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act requirement of a warrant because it was unconstitutional after 9/11, but his later signing of an amendment to the FISA bill was a tacit concession that no, Congress does have constitutional authority to regulate his collection of foreign intelligence with warrant requirements. That means that there were 5 years of felonies committed by Bush and his subordinates. And if you want to put teeth in the Fourth Amendment, you have to have sanctions for violations. So the first thing that those members of Congress should do would be demanding the Attorney General, when he comes up for confirmation in the Senate, pledge that he will open grand jury proceedings and examine all those who are involved in the terrorist surveillance program, again, which enabled spying on Americans without any kind of judicial warrant as the law required. Then the other thing, there needs to be a reexamination of the current law, which is really quite atrocious. It authorizes in substance group warrants where the administration can indiscriminately intercept emails and conversations of Americans who are so-called thought to be abroad. But you know, when you're doing emails, there isn't a specific geographical location for you. So the standard that the statute provides enables the administration to vacuum clean almost all of your emails. But I want to mention, if I could, Peter, one other thing.
Yeah, we got about 40 seconds. Go ahead, Bruce.
To your audience, and that is Nancy Pelosi. And the most important reform to restore constitutional government is to prevent the president from undertaking wars after he deceives the American people in Congress. And so I've drafted a bill with Walter Jones and submitting it to Chairman Conyers' Judiciary Committee that would make it a crime for a president to deceive Congress or the American people to obtain authorization to initiate war. And Nancy Pelosi needs to be lobbied to put this on the calendar and get a vote on that. That would do more than anything else to restore law. As Cicero said, in time of war, the law falls silent. We have to prevent that from happening.
All right, Bruce Fine. I fully support that. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Let us know how we can help lobby Walter Jones and others to get that passed. Bruce Fine, the new book is Constitutional Peril. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Why are they so angry? This is Dave Ross on CBS Radio Network. It started in California, and it's spreading to other cities now. Thousands of people marching to protest the passage of California's Proposition 8, which took away the right to marry from a specific group of people because the majority of Californians couldn't accept the idea that love between two men or two women could be equal to the love between a man and a woman. A majority said that even the most committed gay relationship was worse than the most dysfunctional straight relationship. But they also said something else. Proposition 8 means that while the state is willing to validate the marriages of most churches, there are some churches, churches who conduct marriages which they believe to be just as valid in the eyes of God, whose marriages are invalidated by government. Even though it's a marriage of two consenting adults who are willing to state publicly that they're in love and who proclaim before God that they're willing to cling only to each other and remain united for life, the state of California now tells them, we do not accept your religious belief. We prefer the beliefs of those other churches. The California Constitution now officially endorses some religions over others. So if you wonder why all the anger, the demonstrations, the boycotts, the blacklists, how would you feel if the state told your church that it was free to define what God is, but not free to define when two consenting adults are married? Oh well, voters have spoken. I guess they figure that if the government can take over the economy, it might as well take over the definition of love, too. Now this.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. Experience our distinctive Pinot Noir. Its lush, elegant style has also made it America's favorite. Our award-winning Merlot, or the rich Cabot Riesling with its fresh, vibrant character and fruit aromas. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Imported by Pompe International, Boca Raton, Florida.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15.
$1,000 for extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Quite continental.
Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs. Conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
So the question is, what's the true cost of this global warming, climate change thing?
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming. A spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorofluorocarbon strip away ozone. It can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and they've now deduced the vampires of progress have come on to roost.
This week, a study was released by the University of California at Berkeley that analyzes the underlying costs and the likely impacts of global warming here in California. And we are joined by two people involved with this. David Roland Holst is the author of the report. David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter.
It's nice to talk with you. And also Noel Perry from Next 10, which funded this study, joins us as well. Noel?
Hello, Peter.
Hi, nice to talk with you. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. How about you?
Real good. I thank you for joining us. And, David, let me start with you. Give us the overview, the elevator pitch. What was the motive here to conduct this study?
Peter, we wanted to basically put numbers, to economic numbers, to the apprehensions that I think people naturally feel when they hear about climate change. It seems like a very vague danger, but like the risk of earthquakes, it's something real. And even though it's unprecedented and we don't have a lot of historical information, we've got very good science now, which gives us solid indications about what to expect. And we wanted to translate that science into economic numbers that people can, both public and private sector stakeholders, can understand and begin to incorporate in their decisions.
And Noel Perry, tell us a little bit about Next 10. Your website is simple, Next 10, that's N-E-X-T, the number 10.org. What is the entity and what is your involvement in this study?
Sure. Next 10 is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And we're focused on looking at research at the nexus between the environment and the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I founded it 5 years ago, and we started off doing budget work around the state to inform citizens about the California budget, which, as you know, Peter, is the legislators and the governor are working on it.
That's an understatement.
And we created something called the California Budget Challenge, where one could go online and actually learn about the challenge and do their own California budget, and this would help them understand the difficult trade-offs. So that's more important than ever during this time, and as you know, budgets reflect values. But anyway, the work that we have done with David Rowland Host is very important because we were very interested to understand, global warming impacts in California. And we were fortunate enough to work with David on another report that he did for us about a month ago, which showed that there were 1.5 million jobs created between 1972 and 2006 because of energy efficiency and the savings that came for Californians.
Mm-hmm.
And actually $45 billion of payroll. So this second study having to do with adaptation mitigation is very exciting because it's really the beginning of a number of studies that are going to be coming out in California about climate change and the various risks.
And David Rowland Host, as you conducted this study and compiled this data and then analyzed it, what do you see as how this information is going to be used? In a moment, we're going to enumerate some of your findings, but how do you see its impact?
I hope that it begins to turn the heads of private and public sector decision makers, but particularly I think California has established its landmark mitigation policies. AB 32 is a wonderful example of initiative for the state and the nation, for the rest of the world. And now we need to move forward and think about adaptation. California can't stop global warming alone, but we have a responsibility to protect ourselves from its consequences. It's something that's happening now, and I think we can take a very proactive response. My hope is not only that the state will do it, and we see today, this is a total surprise to all of us on this project, that the governor has issued an executive order directing state agencies to plan for climate impacts. We were completely unaware of this, but very happy to see that this is exactly what we're looking for. And, of course, we're all looking towards Washington, too, because we have a sense that Washington's moved beyond the denial phase on climate change. And once the what I call the euphoria begins to dissipate in Washington, something I feel very strongly, I must concede, but I think once people begin to settle down to the challenges, I hope they will see in this adversity real opportunity. If the next president wants to take the mantle of his turnaround predecessors like FDR, he can look to the transition from the Depression to the WPA programs. He can look to the Second World War and the incredible economic mobilization that resulted from that adversity, and then to the Marshall Plan, the response to adversity in Europe. He can look to satellite envy and how it created the space race and the IT revolution.
Mm-hmm.
This report provides a blueprint for thinking about how we can turn adversity from climate into a new deal for California.
And David Rowland Host, as you look at the implementation of AB 32, the Global Warming Solutions Act, we're now at the stage where the Air Resources Board, the entity that's been put in charge of implementing it, is in the scoping plan phase. And this scoping plan is due by this coming January. Will your data help inform the scoping plan, for example, by identifying the potential impacts on tourism of climate change?
Actually, Peter, this report looks well beyond the 2020 timetable of AB 32. The last report we did on energy efficiency is much more relevant to AB 32 and mitigation policies. It demonstrates that efficiency is a very pro-growth strategy. Climate action policies basically come in two flavors, sweet and sour. And the sweet ones are efficiency measures that save people money, and that translates into economic growth. The sour ones are cleanup and pay-to-pollute policies. Of course, a comprehensive bill like AB 32 includes both kinds, but we know that bill is going to stimulate the economy, and we provide estimates of that in the first paper. The second report, the one that we've released today, is posted on the website. It's over 200 pages, lots of details. But the basic message there is now we need to shift our focus to thinking about long-term adaptation. And that doesn't mean decisions 50 years from now. It means that for certain categories of adaptation, such as infrastructure, we need to begin to mainstream adaptation into our plans and our thinking. Roads built today, bridges built today will last for 100 years. We're building a new Bay Bridge right now, not because the old one fell down, but because we can't wait for the earthquake that will bring it down. We have to be sure that the services that bridge provides won't be disrupted. and we need to take the same measures towards other infrastructure. And we have three airports in the Bay Area that are very close to sea level. They're very important airports.
Yeah.
But we need to fortify them, and I hope we don't have to contemplate relocating any of them. But we also have ports, marine ports. California's ports mediate 40% of all the container shipping in the United States, between the United States and the rest of the world. They transit 23% of all the trade, the international trade for the United States. And those assets are at risk of long-term exposure to three components. All these natural processes have three components. There's a trend, there's a cycle, and there's randomness in it. Sea level will rise. We know this now. It's going to rise by at least a meter. And maybe 2 meters over the next 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But around that sea level rise will be tidal cycles that make those rises much more dangerous. And then there'll be storm damage, which, as we learned in the Gulf Coast, can be devastating.
Yeah.
So we really need to plan for that. And you don't build levees for a decade. You build them for a 100-year flood or a 200-year flood.
That's David Roland Holst. Yep. He is the author of this new report, California Climate Risk and Response. You can read an executive summary or the entire report. It's available at the website next10.org. That's next10.org. And I want to pause for a moment. Our flagship station in Monterey, KRXA 540, is about to break away for a CSUMB basketball game. And we wish the team all the best. And it will interrupt our web stream for listeners. You'll be switching over to basketball on the web and on KRXA 540. But if you want to catch the rest of this conversation and our Brad Blog Hour next hour, it'll be available as a podcast just after the show ends tonight, about 6 o'clock Pacific time, and that's at peterbcollins.com, and I hope that helps you out. Gentlemen, now I want to go into the executive summary that I've reviewed of this report and just briefly walk our listeners through the different areas, the different economic sectors that have been evaluated. And I'll ask each of you to give us a brief comment on it. David Roland Holst, one of the things that I'll point out is that in broad terms, you look first at assets at risk, and then you look at the potential cost in terms of damage to or decline in the value of those assets. Is that a fair way of a broad summary of the points here?
That's correct, yeah, and it's very important to understand that assets at risk don't represent a potential cost. They simply represent the stakes. And individual stakeholders will be basically left at the mercy of nature. This is not a doomsday scenario report, but it's a report that shows what will happen if we don't take action.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live in Monterey, you were lucky today. If you live in Montecito, you were not lucky today.
Yes.
So the assets at risk is just intended to give everyone a sense of the scope of these issues.
And speaking of Montecito, let's start with the risk of fire damage. It's in your category called real estate. And first of all, what level of assets are at risk, David?
Well, we estimate that for real estate assets, the potential fire risk for real estate assets is about $1.5 trillion. So California has a total of $4 trillion worth of real estate, even taking account of the recent misfortunes in the real estate market. But only part of those are vulnerable, although it's a larger part than many people expect, because wildfires don't just occur in mountainous areas, as we can see in the misfortunes of Santa Barbara today. I'm so sorry to have this tragic example of the risk, but we can see that these risks are very real.
Indeed, it is late in the fire season, but Montecito,
right,
unfortunately, is giving us this present tense example.
That's Noel, right.
Noel Perry, would you like to comment on this area?
No, except to say that, as we all know, there's real estate, there are houses, residences located, you know, all over California that are in, you know, potential fire areas, and so that's of great concern, and that's what David is talking about here in terms of climate change making perhaps greater problems for those types of situations moving forward.
And
it's also valuable, especially for policymakers, to see the difference between the direct cost, which would be for a given structure or a given infrastructure or component, and the indirect cost, which would relate to all the services provided by the infrastructure or the collateral damage to local asset markets. So 1 meter sea level rise would cause beaches in Southern California to recede by over 30 feet. This affects the amenity value, the recreational value of these assets, and that will affect the local economy. So the indirect cost may be many times the direct cost.
And I'm reading here now under real estate and insurance, and maybe I'm cherry-picking this line. You tell me. Using this estimate, the insurance exposure for nearshore property in California could be on the order of $400 billion.
That's correct. Yeah, that most valuable property in California is along the coastlines. And depending on how the state responds to with infrastructure investments to protect this property, the insurance risks and the commensurate premiums may escalate sharply. This is one of the really important areas of the report. In every case that we look at potential damages, we ask a question, how should these adaptations be financed? Because we've learned that now in many cases in New Orleans and also in financial markets that the role of the public sector in dealing with risk can have positive but also adverse and unintended consequences for the way that the private sector deals with risk. So if, for example, if the government, the state government spends a lot of money defending valuable coastal assets, they'll be taking taxpayer dollars from other properties that are not defended. And that implies a big transfer of wealth. So we feel like it's important to pay attention to market risk assessments and allow the private sector to assume significant responsibility. The opposite case would be things like floodplain insurance. These are policies that create the wrong messages for adaptation.
We're going to take a break and return. We're talking about the new report just issued this week, California Climate Risk and Response. You just heard the voice of its author, David Roland Holst, and we're also talking with Noel Perry, the founder of Next10.org, the group that funded this study. If you have a question or comment, you can bring it on now. If you're not underwater, call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. It's a gorgeous day out there right now, but we've got a lot going on in traffic. In Salinas, on Northbound 101, just south of Baranda Road, there's a traffic hazard. Several vehicles have hit it. CHP is on the scene. Also, on Northbound 101, just north of Highway 183, there is a traffic hazard there. A couch and cushions are in the slow lane. Many vehicles have already hit them. So watch out there. Now taking a look at Santa Cruz, we have a few traffic hazards happening there. On Freedom Boulevard at Hames Road, there is a black pipe in the road. On Southbound Highway 1, just north of State Park Drive, there is a 6-foot-long board in the fast lane. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a great commute and enjoy this beautiful day.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream with the Quantum Leap, 9 p.m. Saturday.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. It is not dying.
This is Bob Oliver inviting you to participate in the Quantum Leap. Raise issues, ask questions. Together we find answers and solutions. And think for yourself on 540 AM, KRXA 540.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove. 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
We continue on the Peter B. Show.
Here we are on a summer night.
Well, it feels like it.
Staring at the sea. Tell me, is there something wrong? You can talk to me. I can hear it in your voice.
We're talking about the newly released report, California Climate, Risk and Response. That's a tune called Strange Weather from Glenn Frey, the ex-Eagle. With us, David Roland Holst and also Noel Perry. David's the author of this report and Noel Perry's group Next 10 with the website next10.org funded the study that we're talking about. And, David, let's talk next about two critical areas, agriculture and combined with that is forestry and fisheries. These are big drivers of the California economy, certainly influenced by climate effects.
You're right, Peter. They're very important geographically. Before we go ahead, just a small point of information. I have to give credit to my co-author and graduate assistant, Frederick Carl. He's also on this report. And I've also got a big pyramid of very talented research assistants that participated in this. And finally, we've relied on some very distinguished scholarship across California on the climate work. The state has sponsored a very significant amount of this research into the science of climate change, and we're standing on the shoulders of some really talented academics and other scholars who will be reporting work. I think the state's reports, they have a parallel activity going on, mostly focused on the climate science.
Okay, you know, happy to share the credit.
Yeah, anyway, in those two areas, and I'd also like to include water because it's so important to agriculture, we're going to see really a reconfiguration of our resource scarcity patterns over the next half century, and it has really significant implications for patterns of land use, for patterns of water allocation. In California, as you probably know, the water comes in from the northwest with storms, and it's retained in two major storage facilities. One is the aquifer, that's the underground water in the state, that's the largest. The second is snowpack. The snowpack, I'm sorry to say, is on its way to extinction by the end of the century. And this is a relatively conservative scenario. As you may know, the IPCC has already revised its warming scenarios, and the most pessimistic scenarios a year ago are now the median scenarios. So the snowpack, given us our water in the summertime in California, is going to basically lose that capacity. And with that, we're going to find we have very serious seasonal water scarcity issues. This will increase the risk of forest fires because it desiccates the forest floors in the summertime. So fires that might otherwise be moderate will be much more serious. And the reduction of water in the summer across the entire Sierra Nevada and the northern areas is going to increase both the frequency and the intensity of forest fires. For agriculture, there is actually a somewhat positive story in the sense that certain parts of California that weren't eligible for year-round agriculture will become eligible. But, of course, crops will be migrating northward, and some of the southern areas will be much less hospitable, at least to traditional crops. There may be alternatives, crops from more hot weather areas. But, again, the water availability is going to drive this very significantly. And we're going to see, as I'm afraid, a much stronger rivalry between urban and rural water use in California. The current allocation systems are really very unbalanced. Water is available at about 2% of the cost in the rural sector of what we pay as urban water users. And those systems are going to come under a lot of stress. There'll be a lot of rivalry about resources that emerges from these patterns of scarcity.
Now, I've have seen Waterworld, so I have a hunch. Noel Perry, let me turn to you again, please, and ask what your thoughts are here as you analyze this report and consider its impact on the average Californian. What I'm learning here is I'm going to be spending a lot more on insurance. I should probably sell my skis. what else do you think we need to take away from this report and prepare Californians for this future?
Well, I think that's a very good question, Peter, and I think one of the most important takeaways from the report is that the most expensive thing that Californians can do is to do nothing. That's very important that we, at a state level, start to make preparations for this. And I think David and his authors say this very clearly. One of the most important things is that we need to continue to study this evolution so that we can adapt. And specifically as relates to infrastructure, as David mentioned, there's a lot of infrastructure construction going on now and will continue on for years and years. And we need to start dialing that into what we're building in the state of California. Similarly, we need to continue the smart mitigation that we've already started with AB 32. And that was proven by David's first study when he looked at the number of jobs that were created. But mitigation provides a very powerful economic stimulus. And so for Californians in general, I think we as a state are some of the most knowledgeable on this issue. And I think, as David referred to earlier, in terms of what's happening in Washington, a lot of talent will come from Washington, from California to Washington to help the new president-elect with his new energy program. And there's just tremendous talent here in California, and what we've done in terms of energy efficiency going back 40 years is just really amazing.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining us today. Noel Perry, thanks to you, and Next10, that's next10.org, where people can read this report. Thank you for the funding you provided. And David Roland Holst, to you and your research team, our thanks. We'll be watching these issues very carefully, and you've given us a baseline to monitor things from. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good to talk to you both. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take a break and return. Brad Friedman in his regular weekly appearance as we talk election protection, Alaska, Minnesota, Georgia, and more.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does your
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Peter King, live at the Kennedy Space Center, where Shuttle Endeavor has just turned night into day.
3, 2, 1, booster ignition. And liftoff of Space Shuttle Endeavour, preparing our home in space for a larger international family.
With an almost full moon overhead, 7 astronauts are on their way to the International Space Station, nearly 7,000 miles per hour now. They're 4 minutes, 50 seconds into their flight. So far, so good. Endeavour carrying a new galley, toilet, sleeping quarters, water purifier that'll help the station double its crew size from 3 to 6 next year. They're due to dock there on Sunday. I'm Peter King, live at the Kennedy Space Center, now with more CBS News. Here's Bill Whitney.
Here's a holiday forecast that has nothing to do with the weather.
It will be a smaller, leaner, simpler Christmas.
Aaron Amendinger at the Wharton School on today's report that retail sales fell nearly 3% in October.
Consumer spending is 2/3 of U.S. GDP, and I think it's clear that consumers are just afraid to spend. If they have money, they feel bad spending.
The news shook Wall Street, where the Dow gained more than 500 points yesterday. Today it lost 337 to finish the week at 84.97. In Southern California, A helicopter goes into battle against a wildfire that's destroyed nearly 200 homes in the scenic coastal town of Montecito. Andrew Berman's house went up in flames.
You take a risk living in this community, and it's the price you pay sometimes.
CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy says the destruction is random and unpredictable.
There are entire homes gone, and all that's standing is the chimney, and then next to them is a perfectly intact house. So these embers fly through the air and hit a house, and it can be completely destroyed. And then you look around, and you see the mountaintops, and there are smoke chutes coming up from the mountains where there are homes burning.
Actor Rob Lowe fled his house as flames came up the mountain. Oprah Winfrey's landmark mansion was spared. For 24 hours, there's been rampant speculation that Hillary Clinton would be Barack Obama's Secretary of State. But the president-elect apparently hasn't made a decision. Today he met with another leading contender, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who was U.N. ambassador during the Clinton administration. A warning from the Food and Drug Administration staff about dermal fillers injected into the skin to get rid of wrinkles. Today's report says some people have suffered serious problems, including facial palsy, disfigurement, severe allergic reactions, and anaphylactic shock. One dermal filler, Juvederm, is made by Allergan. A company spokeswoman, Caroline Van Hove, insists the product has a favorable safety profile.
Most commonly reported adverse events with this product are minor to moderate in nature. They're temporary. And the most common complaint that we receive following use of the product is swelling.
Price of oil is down to $57 a barrel. This is CBS News.
How to turn 30 bucks into 180 without a magic wand. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot and spend about 30 bucks on an Energy Star programmable thermostat. Step 2. Install your new programmable thermostat and save an average of $180 a year on your energy bills. Step 3. Say abracadabra.
To help you save even more, we've lowered prices on over 1,000 items throughout the store. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Guys, you don't have to be a meteorologist to know that cold weather is just around the corner. Now's the time to head to the men's store inside JCPenney. You'll find great deals on the best brands. JCPenney has everything you need to stay warm and look cool. 50% off fleece tops, sweaters, and casual shirts. 50% off jackets and heavyweight shirts. Plus, suit separates, sport coats, and dress pants are also 40 to 50% off. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
What would it be like if one day gay people didn't show up? CBS's Sam Litzinger tells us California might have a chance to find out.
Now that California voters have decided to ban gay marriage in the state, many homosexuals are looking for ways to protest. Writing in the Los Angeles Times, at least in part seriously, columnist Joel Stein says designate December 5th as No Gays for a Day Day.
If you're gay, don't go to work, don't go to school, don't go shopping. Try as hard as you can not to go to bars that night. I think that's going to be the toughest.
He says a No Gays Day would show what would happen if gays just disappeared. Stein says he's not entirely sure what the effect would be, but it's worth a shot. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
President Bush is hosting a White House dinner on the eve of tomorrow's summit on the global financial crisis. To face the grim realities of recession, job losses, and stock market declines, the leaders of 20 nations will be fortified with fruitwood-smoked quail, rack of lamb, and pear tort with huckleberry sauce. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to pump up the festive without pumping up the energy bill. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get some energy-efficient LED Christmas lights and decorations that use up to 90% less energy. Step 2. Decorate, making your home ultra-festive. Step 3. Bask in the glow of a lower energy bill.
The Home Depot has all the decorations you need to get your home ready for the holidays at guaranteed low prices that are now even lower. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Nibble, nosh, savor, devour.
Kim, what are you talking about?
What I'm going to do with the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club.
Holiday Taste of
Sam's Club, where I can sample the perfect holiday meal before I host my own. Lobster ravioli, spiral glazed ham, decadent chocolate layer cake.
Ooh.
Live chef events, too.
Don't miss the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club. Friday, November 21st through Sunday, November 23rd, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Not a member? Join during the event and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See club for details.
Live.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We're going to teach you election protection activists a lesson today. You better make the connection. Ask a question. Spend the night in jail.
You think this machine is democratic, all slick and clean and automatic, a paperless process right there on the touch screen. But you never hear the tabulator tweaking late at night after you was all sleeping. A wham-bam scam and the program flips it for McCain. No way! This is for your own protection. You better make the connection. Cause I ain't gonna let them steal the election.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, where we turn to Brad Friedman, the citizen journalist and proprietor of bradblog.com, to talk about the issues that are fundamental to a democracy. Are the elections free, fair, transparent, and are all the votes counted? Brad Friedman continues to blog right up to showtime. How are you, Brad?
I am indeed blogging right up to showtime, trying to get this story out, a remarkable story out of Florida. But before I give you information on that, I'll ask you, are elections fair and free in this country, Peter B.?
They're only free to the extent that they don't charge me to vote.
Yet.
Yeah, they'll come up with some sort of a poll fee that's not a poll tax. But there are serious questions, and we remain unconvinced about the integrity of our elections. Even when the presidential race brought me what I wanted, I freely concede that in many states people were purged from the rolls. Obama's victory might have been even bigger. Well, possibly some states wouldn't have gone to Obama. But questions remain in Alaska, in Georgia, and we're going to delve into those this hour. Also, Brad, we will have an update later this hour from Roger Schuler, who blogs as Legal Schnauzer, on the Don Siegelman case. Siegelman had his election stolen and then was railroaded into jail. And there's some stunning new information in the Siegelman prosecution that we'll get for us later this hour. But as I teased in our intro here, we have a case of an election activist, a woman who actually ran to serve as an election registrar or a supervisor of elections in Broward County, Florida, who joins us right now. It's Ellen Brodsky. Hi, Ellen.
Hi there. Good evening to you and everybody in San Francisco.
Well, we're celebrating your freedom, Ellen. I'm glad that you are laughing right now. I imagine about 24 hours ago it was not so funny.
Free at last, praise God, praise the Lord, free at last. No, there was nothing funny about this whole thing.
Now give us a little background, because you were a candidate for Broward County Supervisor of Elections this year, and you have been active in the election movement since?
Yes.
Since, like, 2000?
Since 2001.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And so tell us what transpired here.
This was a culmination of years of me being treated as though I was radioactive when I attended various canvassing board meetings and testing of the voting machines for various elections, where I would point out pretty obvious flaws in the testing process or the certification process, such as, let's say, all the machines that were tested at a pre-election testing were a violation of Florida law by not fielding them to any real precincts on election day.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for example, none of the early voting machines were properly tested. Or, let's say, the optical scanners this time around, and this is not unique every election, our county has opened up the voting machines for early voting at least a week before the start of the election itself, and this time it was October the 1st for the optical scanners, and early voting started on October the 20th. But this has become worse and worse and worse. Every time, every election we've come to, Maybe it's because my voice is louder now in the sense that the Broward Election Reform Coalition has grown. More people know who I am over the years, and I have a greater following. So the supervisor of elections currently is trying to stop me from finding out what is really going on in the election process. And this has gone to the extreme of being almost like a fascist state to try to prevent me from finding out anything that's going on, even getting public records requests or summary reports or just even attending or being treated like a human being. And the reason she does it is because she can get away with it.
Well, and Ellen, it seems like they're really playing games with you because you tried to attend a meeting of the canvassing board,
Yeah. And
you showed up at an appropriate time, and you were told, oh, the meeting's been canceled, and everybody went home.
Exactly.
But was that a lie?
Yes.
All right. What actually did happen?
Well, it's a progressive thing. I just want to point out to the listening audience here, I filed a lawsuit against the supervisor of elections and the canvassing board on October the 31st because I was not allowed to enter the voting machine warehouse to observe a manual recount, which is a violation not only of the Florida Sunshine Laws. Whenever there's a public meeting, members of the public are supposed to be able to be present
right. To
observe the process.
Mm-hmm.
And also Florida statutes, such as 104.29, which states any time votes are being counted, at least three members of the public are supposed to be present. But our supervisor never publicizes when these events are taking place. So generally speaking, I tend to be a watchdog and citizen observer, so I happen to know, and so very often I'm the only citizen there that shows up.
And if I could jump in here,
please.
We just, even as Ellen was speaking there, I was finally able to post a pretty detailed story on this at Brad Blog, and it includes some quotes from a number of notable folks, both election integrity advocates, such as Ellen Tyson at Voters Unite, and David Earnhardt, filmmaker of Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections,
right. As
well as Ion Sancho.
Oh, wow.
The great election director from Tallahassee, who was actually put in charge of the 2000 recount
sure. Down
there, such that there ever was one.
What did Ion say?
But Ion says it's absolutely outrageous. And I'll just read you a quick quote here. Sancho says, for a candidate or a member of the public who wishes nothing more than to observe the process,
mm-hmm. To
be taken into custody would be outrageous, absent really extraordinary reasons, none of which I've heard articulated in this matter.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say he's been an election official for 20 years, and he has never once had to call any police on any election observer, and says that, you know, he's quite concerned about the amount of power that is given to election officials, particularly in Georgia, and that it's important to be very careful with that power. And the fact that you, Ellen, election observer here and a candidate
right. On
the ballot was detained
right. At
the orders, apparently, of okay. The election director that you were running against.
Correct.
It's just incredible to me, and I also want to note that it was originally misreported this morning by the South Florida Sun Sentinel that you had been released on bail at 8 p.m. last night. In fact, bond was posted by your son at 8 p.m., but
correct. You
did not leave jail until, 5:45 a.m. this morning?
Yes, it was horrible.
So were you driving drunk when you got to the election office there, Brenda?
Well, you know, I wish I really would have loved to have won this election
because
one of the people that is my role model is Ion Sancho, and I wanted to be able to join the ranks of that kind of caliber in Florida. And
now, Ellen, do you have any questions that the election that you ran, the race you ran against Brenda Snipes,
yeah. Was
conducted fairly, and were all the votes counted?
Well, I can tell you for a fact the way the machines were tested, they were definitely not conducted fairly.
Oh.
I would say that my percentage from early, from election day and absentee ballots was much higher than my percentage from early voting. And I know for a fact that the early voting machines were not tested, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was a conducted failure or not? Look, in Broward County, the demographics is like overwhelmingly Democratic. You know, we have like over 500,000 registered Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running as Broward County's first nonpartisan candidate for supervisor of elections. So I was running as an NPA in an Obama landslide. And many of the Democratic Party itself was actually working against my campaign by telling people, you know, to vote straight Democrat, that I was a Republican, that I was the devil for running against the Democrats.
How about a socialist distribution? Are you a socialist distributionist type?
No. And you know something, it's amazing. Quite a few of my supporters in this election turned out to be a lot of Republicans.
Now, have you palled around with known terrorists? We got to get to the bottom of this, Ellen.
Well, all I can tell you is that based on they're stopping me, preventing me from attending canvassing board meetings, getting public records requests, and auditing my election in general, there's no way for me to have any consensus or evidence that my election was a fair and square deal. This is the problem I'm facing right now.
And Ellen, was there a Democratic candidate put up for this?
What do you mean? Brenda Sipes was a Democrat.
Oh, Brenda's the Democrat.
Well, Brenda Sipes is a Democrat.
Well, she's a registered Democrat.
I hadn't realized that. Okay, very good to know.
But that's the reason she won. I mean, a lot of people were very upset. I mean, at the early voting lines, for example, the radio announcers and all the public was saying, yelling, screaming, anybody but Sipes. But at the same time, lemmings over the cliff were given their palm cards to vote straight Democratic tickets.
Ellen, we've got to go to a break in a minute here. What else would you like to tell us about this episode?
I would like to say that I was treated as a common criminal. I went to the canvassing board with a pure heart to go there and to observe there was supposed to be a machine recount today and a possible certification of the voting machines. So I went there with a pure heart to observe the process. And all I can say is it's impossible for me to be effective at this point as an election integrity activist in Broward County because I am totally excluded from the process by those in power. This was an extreme use of unwarranted force because I was accosted and thrown out. And it was an abuse of power of the greatest level, greatest magnitude. So Brenda Sipes violated her trust with the Broward County citizens by arresting me for a false arrest for no cause whatsoever.
Well, I hope you'll sue her, but.
Well, I can't give you all the details at the moment, but I could certainly say that I really believe, based on the episode that this happened, that Brenda Sipes should certainly resign.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see her go.
Well,
and this is not a personal thing. This is based on when she disenfranchises me from attending canvassing board meetings and observing the vote count. She's not just disenfranchising me. She's disenfranchising all the citizens of Broward County because she's not allowing the public in to be a part of the process.
Ellen, I'm glad you have been sprung. Now fight until you're finished, and we'll back you up.
Thank you very much.
Ellen Brodsky in Broward County, Florida, an election protection activist who got a night in jail for her efforts. Yeah, I guess not. We'll take a break and return with Brad Friedman here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Somewhere in this town, see me and the boys, we don't like it. So we're getting up and going down.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I founded a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
At Homescapes Carmel, we search far and near to find the best locally made, American-made, and imported furnishings the world has to offer. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I scour the globe to find unique, unusual, and unmatched merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores, or visit homescapescarmel.com.
Coleman, giving him, what, a 9-vote advantage. And this, Sean Hannity has, and the rest of the Republican, the official Republican Party, have gotten themselves.
More with Brad in a moment right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We're voting Republican because we don't like shopping at small neighborhood stores.
We don't want the problem of choosing where to shop.
And we just love cheap plastic crap from China.
I'm voting Republican because I don't really want a cure for AIDS or breast cancer. They're just gays and women.
I'm voting Republican because I think new drugs should be made available immediately, whether they've been tested properly or not. If the major pharmaceutical companies' bottom lines are healthy, then I feel healthy too.
Bye-bye, baby. Have a good day. Yeah. I'm voting Republican so that my little Caitlin can be in a classroom with at least 30 other children. That way, she can be challenged by fighting for attention.
I'm voting Republican because women just can't be trusted to make decisions about their own bodies. Never, ever, ever.
I'm voting Republican because I've already seen a great outdoors. Considering our use of fossil fuels freely is far more important than preserving our natural wildlands.
We're voting Republican because we like a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
We really like knowing that even if we're separate, we'll still be called equal.
I'm voting Republican because I need to be told who I can love.
I told you.
Honey, I need the government to tell me.
I just need them to tell me how I can best show a lifetime commitment.
And Republicans are just the folks to do that, sweetheart.
I'm voting Republican because corporations should not have to pay to clean up environmental damage. The EPA is an outmoded idea. If people want clean water, buy it in a bottle.
I'm voting Republican because I don't want to know if the food I'm eating has been genetically modified or exposed to radiation. I don't want to have to live with that fear, you know? So, if the label says it's food, that's good enough for me.
I'm voting Republican because
I really enjoy being screwed by the utility company.
We need more minorities in prison.
Because hybrid cars really suck.
I just don't feel I deserve health insurance.
Because Texas needs more billionaires.
I'm voting Republican because sometimes the Constitution is just one big inconvenient headache.
I think the whole world should be run by one big corporation. I think it'd be so much cozier.
Because all other countries are inferior to us.
And we should start as many wars as we need to keep it that way.
So I can stay in Iraq.
So I can go to Iran.
So if you were thinking about voting something besides Republican, don't bother. Stay home. We've got it all taken care of. You'll get exactly what you deserve.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're partial to progressive politics and electric guitars. We have the good bass line and drum track, too. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and if you haven't been to the blog lately, you got to drop by. There's a lot of breaking news there, updates on some of these elections that have not been resolved from November 4th, and other things that strike Brad's fancy. That's, of course, bradblog.com. And, Brad, we're joined by Emily Levy from velvetrevolution.us. Hello, Emily.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm pleased to be here with you.
Well, thanks for joining us, and tell us what you got for us.
Well, first I wanted to say that I'm really glad that you got Ellen Brodsky on there and that she really is standing for voters. She was one of our standing for voters candidate pledgers before the election, and she's really putting herself on the line there to do what's right for the voters in Broward County, Florida. What I've been working on today, which is now up at the top of the blog at the Velvet Revolution Election Protection Strike Force site, is a story about some irregularities that are starting to surface in the count for Proposition 8 here in California, which is the constitutional ban on same-sex marriage.
Sure is. We haven't talked about that for an hour and a half.
And so, might you have been talking about the lawsuits that were filed? I wasn't listening to the show an hour and a half ago.
No, today we were actually talking about separation of church and state and how to report violations of tax-exempt status to the IRS.
Okay. Another good topic.
Uh-huh. So what anomalies have you found in the vote counting of Prop 8?
Well, the first thing that I want to say is that at this point, what we're seeing is enough things beginning to bubble up that just are saying to us that we need to start asking the questions and looking really carefully at the evidence. So I'm not at this point anywhere near able to say that the results of the election were incorrect. I want to make that really clear. But as you know, one of the ways around the world that elections are evaluated for their accuracy is through exit polling.
Right.
And there were some exit polls that were screen captures were made of some exit polls from Edison Matofsky on election night before those polls were adjusted to match the official vote counts that showed Proposition 8 going down to defeat.
Hmm.
And those were captured by volunteers with Election Defense Alliance.
Okay. And do you know what geographical areas those may have come from?
I know that, this is obviously California because it's for Proposition 8, and
sure.
I know that their goal is to have a representative sample. And so I don't know exactly where that was done.
Sure. The reason I ask, Emily, is that if you look at the map of the results of Prop 8, opposition to it is all along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
It's L.A., Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Eureka, and just a couple of points in between.
Yep. And it's an interesting map, and I encourage people to go there and look, and it's also really interesting to look at that map and compare it to the map for Proposition 4, which was another really controversial one, which was the
parental choice.
Right.
Parental consent,
one thing
sorry.
Is exit polls. Another thing is reports that are coming in from election observers. And in all of these cases, and also the independent exit polls that were done by Election Defense Alliance, Steve Freeman of Election Integrity, and the Warren poll, they haven't released their results yet, but I've talked to them about their preliminary results, and theirs are also indicating that the vote that are very different from the vote count and indicating a much stronger no vote, kind of opposite the percentages of what's being announced.
Very interesting, Emily.
And so in all of these cases, including I'm trying to get that phone to stop ringing. Including from election observers around the state, we're finding indications of things that would cause a large number of likely no voters for Proposition 8 to have been forced to vote provisional ballots.
Mm.
And there are hundreds of thousands of those that haven't been counted yet. There And there are also hundreds of thousands of vote-by-mail ballots that haven't yet been counted. So it's possible even if there was any targeting of the types of votes that people were permitted to cast, that simply completing the vote count will show a really significant difference in the outcome. But I don't really expect that. And at this point, what we need to have happen is to get volunteers from around the state to observe the post-election auditing processes. And we're offering, Velvet Revolution is offering a training by phone for people who are interested in doing that observation.
Great.
And that's going to be Sunday afternoon, and the details are at the Velvet Revolution Election Protection Strike Force website.
Okay. Is that velvetrevolution.us, and then you just click on the Strike Force, or is it
that's
one
right
URL?
Right there.
Okay, great. And Brad, did you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, well, actually, what time on Sunday is that? Because I'd like people to participate if they can. Is that after in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and we're going to try to set up so that we can record it so that people who can't participate at that time still can hear what went on. And the training is going to be conducted by Tom Corbett of Save Our Vote in Riverside County. And also at the bottom of this blog item at the Strike Force, there's a link to a flyer that people can print out and photocopy and take to distribute at the demonstrations that are happening, protests of the supposed passage of Proposition 8 that are happening all over the state and actually all over the country tomorrow.
That's right.
It's only relevant to pass out the flyers in California that talk about what we're seeing and about this training of volunteers.
That's 4 p.m. Sunday. You can go to velvetrevolution.us to get more information. And I just want to, you know, emphasize how important it is. You know, you're not done with your duty when you go in there and cast your vote. That, you know, it was because, I believe, of the pressure in places like Alaska when we started getting such hinky numbers out of there originally that helped election officials to find some 90,000 votes that previously weren't listed as ballots that were scheduled to be counted. So it's, you know, it's the follow-up after the election, the public oversight by as many eyeballs as possible that can often make a difference in these elections. So if you're available, I hope you'll participate in that call on Sunday and then get out there and oversee the audits, even though they're really spot checks and very minor numbers of ballots. But having people there videotaping can make a difference, a big difference in these things.
Okay. Emily, anything you want to add?
I just wanted to mention that some of the procedures that are happening that can be observed are in place in California because of the reforms that Deborah Bowen enacted after the top-to-bottom review. So things like the 100% hand count of the paper trails from the touchscreen voting machines,
mm-hmm.
that we didn't have before the top-to-bottom review, and it's something that people now can watch.
Okay.
So that's one example. And so I encourage people to go to velvetrevolution.us, click on the Strike Force button, and read a little more about what's happening and how they can get involved.
Fabulous. Emily, thanks for bringing that to our attention. Thanks for working on these issues.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Good to talk to you. Now we're joined by the blogger known as Legal Schnauzer. His driver's license says Roger Schuler. Roger, welcome back to our program, and say hello to Peter and Brad Friedman there.
Hey, Peter and Brad. Thank you. It's good to be on.
Well, it's nice to talk with you again, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to update us on some of the breaking news from Alabama today, because Don Siegelman's case has taken a new twist. He, of course, is the Democrat who had an election stolen from him, and then when he ran to try to right that wrong, he was indicted, the first case fell apart, and then he was reindicted and convicted, sentenced to a 7-year-plus stretch in federal prison. He's been released by a federal court that has a hearing coming up this Monday on his status. And in the meantime, he has been on a one-man crusade. Well, maybe with his daughter, Dana, it's a two-person crusade. But they've been trying to clear his name and to get Karl Rove to testify before the House Judiciary Committee about this particular case. Now, tell us what was revealed today about Laura Canary, the U.S. attorney whose husband is a very close associate of Karl Rove, and her, and I'm air-quoting this term, recusal from the Siegelman case.
The air quotes are key there, Peter. This story, Time Magazine, Adam Zagorin, one of their reporters, broke this, I believe, actually late last night. I think most people just heard about it this morning. And probably the key factor, a woman named Tamara Grimes, who worked as a legal aide in Miss Canary's office in Montgomery, Alabama, has provided documents to the Justice Department, and they show that Miss Canary, while she had supposedly recused herself from the Siegelman case because of the conflicts you just mentioned, actually was communicating with members of the prosecution team. And their email, this is documented in writing, and it's very powerful stuff. There's also some very interesting material about communications between the jury and the prosecution team as the trial was going on. So it just adds to the evidence that was already out there that this whole prosecution really smelled, and it smells even worse today.
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, Roger, if I could, have you ever seen, I know you've been looking at this for a while, as have I, and I've interviewed Siegelman about this. Have you ever seen any sort of similar case here where we have so much, boy, if it's not smoking gun evidence, it certainly is sizzling hot gun evidence of just top to bottom politicization and corruption here in the Bush Justice Department? Is there any better example of this than what we see here in the Siegelman case?
Well, Brad, that's a very good question. I think there is a companion case in Mississippi involving an attorney named Paul Miner and two former state judges. I think Peter has interviewed Scott Horton about West Teal.
Yeah. That's right.
And also John Whitfield. And it's a very similar case. Paul Miner, just to briefly summarize, gave a lot of money. He was a very successful attorney and gave a lot of money to Democratic candidates and also gave money to judicial candidates in Mississippi who were Democrats. And that's perfectly legal in Mississippi, and I think it's legal in Alabama and in a number of states where judges are elected. And what happened is these judges then made rulings in favor of Mr. Miner's clients, and they all three are currently in federal prison because of that. And the kicker, though, is that the rulings these judges made were, as best I think people who've looked at it closely can tell, were correct under the law. In fact, they made the correct rulings. And the U.S. attorney there is a fellow named Dunn Lampton, who's sort of the Lura Canary of Mississippi. So I think that's the companion piece. It has not gotten as much attention. I think Siegelman's status as a former governor is part of the reason, but it's those are two real bad cases. There's also a case up in Wisconsin involving Georgia Thompson, a woman who's a state official, and then a case in Mississippi or in Pennsylvania involving Cyril Wecht, I believe you pronounce it. He's a well-known forensic scientist in Pennsylvania. So there are some others, but I think the Siegelman and Miner are two very similar cases that involve a lot of the same legal issues.
And if I could, I know that the in the Siegelman case, he had a very, very difficult time getting the appeals board to even release him on bail pending that appeal. And I know that Miner, his wife, I believe it was very ill with cancer, and he was trying to get the board to release him at that time. Has he been released? And the second part of the question is, do you think that when Barack Obama comes in here that there will be any real investigation and real accountability brought as far as what has happened to this Department of Justice under Bush?
Ooh, well, that's the big question, that second one there, Brad. The first one, Paul Miner and West Teal and John Whitfield are all still in federal prison. I believe Mr. Miner is in a prison near Pensacola, Florida. West Teal is near Atlanta, and I'm not sure where Mr. Whitfield is. But
and Miner was not released to visit his dying wife.
That's correct, as I understand it, yes. Yeah. And she, like you say, she's very, very ill. And
did he even get a hearing?
I don't know if there was much of a hearing on that. Okay. I mean, it's really inhumane and cruel what has been done. And this is, we're talking about a fellow who's innocent here. And there's one of the big similarities is that the judge in the Miner case clearly gave incorrect jury instructions about what bribery is and what honest services mail fraud is. Apparently, the same thing occurred in the Siegelman case, and that's how, you know, a lot of times people say, well, the jury found him guilty, they must be guilty, but if the judge gives the incorrect jury instructions, if you wind up with a wrongful verdict. And mm-hmm. and then the second question Brad gave is a great one, and I think it's of course Obama's going to have so many things on his plate when he takes over, but I am sure hopeful that the Justice Department will be somewhere near the top of the list.
But, well, these are dirty dishes that need to be cleaned up before we can put more things on the plate there, Roger, if I can extend the metaphor.
Well done.
Stand by, and we'll talk more with you in just a moment. Roger Schuler is our guest. Find his blog. Just Google Legal Schnauzer, and you'll be able to pull that up. And also Scott Horton, who was on our show earlier this week, he has a new post about the Siegelman case. You can find it at thedailybeast.com, thedailybeast.com. More with Brad Friedman and Legal Schnauzer coming up on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. It's a gorgeous day out there right now, but we've got a lot going on in traffic. In Salinas, on northbound 101, just south of Baranda Road, there's a traffic hazard. Several vehicles have hit it. CHP is on the scene. Also, on northbound 101, just north of Highway 183, there's a traffic hazard there. A couch and cushions are in the slow lane. Many vehicles have already hit them. So watch out there. Now taking a look at Santa Cruz, we have a few traffic hazards happening there. On Freedom Boulevard at Hames Road, there is a black pipe in the road. On southbound Highway 1, just north of State Park Drive, there is a 6-foot-long board in the fast lane. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a great commute and enjoy this beautiful day.
Why are they so angry? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. It started in California, and it's spreading to other cities now. Thousands of people marching to protest the passage of California's Proposition 8, which took away the right to marry from a specific group of people because the majority of Californians couldn't accept the idea that love between two men or two women could be equal to the love between a man and a woman. A majority said that even the most committed gay relationship was worse than the most dysfunctional straight relationship. But they also said something else. Proposition 8 means that while the state is willing to validate the marriages of most churches, there are some churches, churches who conduct marriages which they believe to be just as valid in the eyes of God, whose marriages are invalidated by government. Even though it's a marriage of two consenting adults who are willing to state publicly that they are in love and who proclaim before God that they are willing to cling only to each other and remain united for life, the state of California now tells them, "We do not accept your religious belief. We prefer the beliefs of those other churches." The California Constitution now officially endorses some religions over others. So if you wonder why all the anger, the demonstrations, the boycotts, the blacklists, how would you feel if the state told your church that it was free to define what God is, but not free to define when two consenting adults are married? Oh well, voters have spoken. I guess they figure that if the government can take over the economy, it might as well take over the definition of love, too. Now this.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. Experience our distinctive Pinot Noir. Its lush, elegant style has also made it America's favorite. Our award-winning Merlot, or the rich Cabot Riesling with its fresh, vibrant character and fruit aromas. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Imported by Pompe International, Boca Raton, Florida.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and Roger Schuler, a.k.a. Legal Schnauzer. And in the coming week, we'll invite Don Siegelman back on the program to update us on the case. And if you're listening on the weekend, Portland, Missoula, or Seattle, just drop into peterbcollins.com and keep an eye on the podcast. We'll keep you posted that way. Every thought I had, don't mean a thing. And Roger Shuler, as we take a look at the Siegelman case and these new disclosures, what we're seeing is a very clear conspiracy that continued even as they publicly maintained that Laura Canary had recused herself, and I believe Alice Martin had taken over the prosecution in a neighboring jurisdiction. We see that she was deeply involved, and she even made a suggestion in a memo or an email that was acted on by the subsequent prosecutors.
Right, right. She was involved all the way, almost a Wizard of Oz kind of character behind the curtain. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, Peter, her husband has made hundreds of thousands of dollars as a consultant working for opponents of Siegelman. So the conflict of interest there is very clear, and you mentioned Scott Horton's new piece, which just went up. Mm-hmm. There's another very good piece at TPM Muckraker where they interviewed Don Siegelman about what the revelations that came out today. I hope your readers will check that out. It's very interesting. Siegelman calls it outrageous criminal conduct, mm-hmm. and I don't think he uses that term lightly. He's a former attorney general of our state and is well versed in the law and. This hiding these things, really, I guess he's probably referring to obstruction of justice, and I think that that might be an issue to look at as this moves forward.
Well, I got to meet Siegelman in Denver at the Democratic Convention. He's a real solid guy, and it only affirms that our support for him is appropriate, and we will continue to do that. Brad, anything final before we wrap up with Roger?
Roger, are there state officials or are the state newspapers and so forth, are they following this as well, or is this just the national media that is looking at this and the state is tossing in with the bad guys here?
Oh, well, what a great question. Brad, my wife and I were just talking before Peter's folks called about just what an indictment this is of the Alabama press. I mean, they've just done almost nothing. The Birmingham News and the Huntsville Times and the Mobile Press Register are all owned by Advance Publications, and it's just amazing that this biggest story, which is Alabama-based, is being broken by Time Magazine.
Yeah.
It's being driven by bloggers, and of course Scott Horton has played such a huge role, who's an mm-hmm. Alabama native, but you raise a great question. It's kind of embarrassing for our state that our what's supposed to be relatively objective newspapers and TV just haven't done anything. I'm going to be interested tomorrow to see when I open my morning paper if they do anything.
Well, and Horton shared an embarrassment with me earlier this week. We're actually talking about justice for the Bush administration, and Horton's written a powerful piece that's in the December Harper's about that. But he dropped in the conversation that the Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, used to be his law partner, and he's deeply embarrassed by the complicity of the Attorney General in many of these issues. Roger, just a final question for you. Have you gotten your job back?
I have not, Peter. Thank you for asking.
He was fired from the university for blogging, and he didn't do any blogging on university time. Go ahead, Roger.
Right. I have filed an EEOC complaint, which is the first step toward a lawsuit against UAB. And the interesting thing, the whistleblower that came out today, Tamara Grimes, evidently has an employment-related problem. She got retaliated against, I think, because of telling the truth about what was going on in the Justice Department. I lost my job because I was writing truthfully about what's gone on in the Siegelman case and other matters in Alabama. So I could really identify with that. I don't know if she's exactly the nature of her employment situation, but the Time Magazine article makes reference to that.
Yeah. Well, Roger, thank you very much for joining us today. It's great to talk with you, and keep fighting, will you?
Well, thank you, Peter, and thank you, too, Brad, for all you guys do.
Thanks, Roger.
All right, great to talk with you. Brad, I've got 40 seconds. What's the latest in Georgia with more than 50,000 purge voters and a rerun coming up between Saxby Chambliss and his Democratic opponent?
Yeah, Greg Palast has been over some of the concerns about Georgia, and there's going there will hopefully be some legal action taken down there in Georgia soon. I have serious concerns about how that election was carried out. Probably don't have time for the details,
But we'll pick, certainly pick it up next week because there was just a lot of problems in Georgia, and I suspect there will be a lot of problems in this runoff again coming up December 2nd.
All right, Brad, we got a post-program caller for you, so stand by
okay.
and stay on the line, and we'll talk to you and her in just a moment. I want to thank everybody who tuned in, called in, and emailed in to the Peter B. Collins Show this week. I'm much obliged.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails.
And if you can stand it, I'll be sitting in for Lionel on Air America all week long, starting Monday, 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific. Oh, my God. We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing, taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time, it's all done online, and it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation, that's 702-299-5789, or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fit and get rich.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. At the White House this evening, the beginning of an extraordinary summit on the global financial crisis. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
At the start of a working dinner with leaders from over 20 major economic powers and developing nations, President Bush set the stage for the task ahead.
We are here because we share a concern about the impact of the global financial crisis on the people of our nations.
He said they also share a determination to fix the problems that led to the economic turmoil, and he asserted they share a conviction that by working together, the global economy can be restored to the path of long-term prosperity. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The news today shows how deeply this economy has affected consumers. CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes reports retail sales plunged 2.8% last month.
Driving the trend, auto sales down a whopping 5.5% in October, now at their lowest level in 17 years. Furniture sales were off too, down 2.5%, and appliance and electronics sales zapped 2.3%. At electronics giant Best Buy, executives are calling it the most difficult economic climate they've ever seen. Sales at their stores fell 7.6% in October. They don't expect Christmas to be any better.
Democrats in Congress are pushing for $25 billion to bail out U.S. automakers, but instead of tapping the financial rescue fund, the White House wants to speed up the release of Energy Department loans. A wildfire continues to burn in the mountains of Santa Barbara County, California. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is there.
Officials here hope the worst is over, but there is still concern about the winds picking up strength again. After assessing all the damage, the number of homes destroyed has gone up yet again. Ron Prince is Santa Barbara City Fire Chief.
We are thinking the count could be between 100, 150, maybe a little higher. We won't know that for another probably day and a half.
As far as the winds, they are expected to continue for another 24 hours, but they are not expected to be as strong as they were Thursday night when most of the damage took place. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Santa Barbara.
A little more than an hour ago, a picture-perfect launch for Space Shuttle Endeavour. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports.
For the first time in five...